Call a meeting order, if you will. Excuse me, Fred, I didn't want to wake you up yet. But from the roll call here, there's five of us here tonight. They did a quorum. The mayor and Congressman Ross. He's only wanted to be get out of this business and do something bigger. But they are both on a little extended Christmas vacation. And so the five of us will handle the business tonight. To start off tonight, from all of us to all of you, we want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, or whatever you may celebrate at this time of the year, and also a very Happy New Year. And with that, Councilman Wittenstein will do the invocation.
Yes, let's all stand. At this council meeting, help us to make decisions which keep us faithful to our mission and reflect our values. Give us strength to hold to our purpose, wisdom to guide us, and a keen perception to lead us. And above all, keep us charitable as we deliberate.
Amen. While you're remaining standing, Councilor Bonzo will do the Pledge of Allegiance for us, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Lenny, I guess you're acting tonight as the... I love it.
Any important story?
Okay, the next item on the agenda is the reading of the minutes and the approval of the minutes. Approval of the minutes for the meeting on November 30th. Do I hear a motion that we approve those minutes as published?
I move that we approve the minutes as published.
Second.
Motion's been made and second that we approve the minutes of November 30th meeting as published. Any discussion? All in favor, raise your right hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Same sign. Motion carries 5-0. Next item is approval of minutes on December 1st, City Council meeting. Our first City Council meeting as the City of Dunwoody, by the way. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
I so move.
Motion's been moved and second to approve the minutes as published. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 5-0. And the last one is approval of the meeting minutes of the December 15th work session. And do I hear a motion to approve the minutes? Motion's been approved. Motion's been made and second to approve. Any discussion? Okay, no discussion. All those in favor, raise your right hand, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. John, did you vote?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Passes 5-0. Okay, next item on for business is approval of the meeting agenda. Since this is a special meeting, there is no change of the agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the agenda as published?
I'll second.
Made and second. Any discussion? All those in favor, raise right hand, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 5-0, Lenny. We're getting ahead of you, Lenny?
Mm-hmm.
We're getting ahead of you?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay, good.
Not yet. So far, so good.
Okay, public comment. Okay, public comment. Bob Dallas, Bob?
Yes, sir. I'm the only one I get 30 minutes, right? No. Mayor Pro Tem, members of the City Council, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you. I just want to talk about a couple things. First and foremost, you've heard me mention before how important it is that we involve the public with our decision-making process. We have public meetings and public hearings, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm really talking about public forums where we have the opportunity to talk about things, ask questions, get clarifications. You all get input, have the experts talk about it. And what that does is create the charrette process, which I know the city manager is very interested in. But that has to happen in every step of the way when we go beyond the baseline, which is the DeKalb County Code. And I want to mention, for example, some things that you'll be dealing with in offenses and violations. For example, it will be illegal for our kids to sit and play on the sidewalk. For example, it will be unlawful for our kids who want to go off to college after sundown to remove any household goods. For example, maybe you want to keep them. For example, if I have a yard sign against my neighbor who happens to be running for office, I technically could be picketing and violate the law. And I'm not sure that we want to be litigating that. And finally, I know I'm not a fortune teller, but when my pastor does the prayer book of Revelations, I'm just curious if he is. The point is that there's some language in the code that needs to be very carefully looked at, especially as we start bumping up against some of the constitutional rights, which each of us has granted. And more importantly, just as a practical matter, a lot of that can be addressed very readily in public forums where people can talk about it and say, did you really mean that? And let me close with this. Law enforcement has a very tough job to do. And I've said this working closely with them now for over 5.5 years. Let them do those difficult jobs that save lives, protect our streets. We don't want them as social workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dallas. Mr. DeVita.
Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council, pleasure to address you this evening. And first of all, I want to say thanks for all the accomplishments that we've made as a city so far. And I do want to speak in support of our motion we have on our table today to remove the moratorium that we have on businesses. And congratulate you for getting the work on passing zoning. And I also want to echo a comment that Bob had made. As we write these ordinances and as we think about, you know, potential unexpected consequences, I had the thought of, on Christmas Eve, if you are taking home some presents, and you get in a large box and say, well, is this a toaster? Do I need a permit to take this home? So with that said, the process will continue for us, and we want to have as much public input as possible so that we know what the intentions are of these ordinances that we are passing and allow opportunities for them to change in the future. I also wanted to express that the Chamber of Commerce has got a facility right on Shelby-Dumbly Road, and we would also welcome the city to have materials there, because we feel many questions from our citizens. These are not just business people, but many people show up and have questions about the city. They have questions about what to do on business licensing, what to do when their home burns down, and how to get a permit for demolition. And we want to make sure that we have good information to provide to the public. And until you are with us in Dunwoody, the Chamber of Commerce is offering up our facility to use for public relations purposes in the city of Dunwoody.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeVito. Appreciate your comments. And we appreciate everyone's constructive comments and comments in general. Okay, item H, consent agenda. We have none at this time, so we'll move right along to the unfinished business. Item I, number one. Annie, would you read I-1 for us, please?
Yes. I-1 is a second read of ordinance number 2008-1255 to adopt and approve Chapter 25, Water, Sewer, and Sewage Disposal, providing for inclusion and identification of the Code of Ordinances for the City of Dunwoody, Georgia, for your reference. in the future as Chapter 25, Water, Sewer, and Sewage Disposal is attached to and incorporated.
Do I hear a motion? So move.
Second.
Motion's been moved and second. Discussion. I just have one point on that, Council. Brian, on the item of, we were talking about the water restrictions. Did the item get added into the ordinance? That we would mirror DeKalb County's? Did we mirror DeKalb County's water restrictions?
It is the current DeKalb County water restrictions that's in there. It does not reference that we're going to keep DeKalb County's water restrictions.
Okay, point of order. In the violations ordinance that we're also going to, offenses and violations ordinance that we're going to look at tonight, mm-hmm. It does actually reference that we will use the ordinances as passed by DeKalb County.
Yes.
So while it's not in this one, it's in the other one that we're going to pass. And I can point it out to you when we get there.
Okay.
So I think
the process is supposed to be whenever DeKalb County changes their water ordinance, they're supposed to give us a 30-day heads up, and we have 60 days to actually adopt them. Is the current process.
Okay. Well, I want to make a motion to amend the fence. We can do that later down the road. Is that correct, Robert?
I just point out that that DeKalb is misspelled throughout. Not something worth fixing, but it's small K throughout the document.
We won't stop things becoming that right now.
Certainly not.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the ordinance to adopt and approve Chapter 25, Water, Sewer, and Sewage Disposal for the City of Dunwoody, raise your right hand, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passes unanimous, 5-0. Well, when you get all caught up, would you read item I-2, please?
Yes. I-2, second read, ordinance number 2008-456, ordinance to adopt and approve Chapter 16, offenses and violations, providing for inclusion and identification in the Code of Ordinances for the City of Dunwoody, Georgia, to be referenced in the future of Chapter 16, offenses and violations, is attached to and incorporated herein.
Okay, do I hear a motion to approve the ordinance to adopt Chapter 15, offenses and violations?
Second.
Motion's been moved and second. Are there any discussions?
Yeah. I have 5 proposed changes I'd like to make, if I could make them in mass. We'd like to take them one at a time.
As a point of order, I would recommend that you make an amendment and make all 5 at once if you think they go together. Otherwise, we might have to take them individually.
Okay. They're all in separate sections of the same code. So I'll go through them quickly, and then from there we can decide whether we want to go individually or as a group.
Why don't we do that?
Page 2, Section 2, Item C. It reads, any device designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs is obscene material under this section code. I believe this is already covered in the adult-oriented businesses. I'd like that sentence removed.
Just a point of information for you, John. In my corrected version here, it has been removed.
Yeah,
okay.
Several in front of your Chapter 16, there are some changes. I've got a red line. It's about 5 changes, I believe. And that was one of them. At the very start of Chapter 16, you'll notice there's 5 pages. Each one of those pages has a change.
Okay.
Recommended by staff. And that was one of them.
And the next one that has also been changed is the fact that breastfeeding is not indecent. And therefore, the change has been nothing in this ordinance shall hinder the right of a woman from nursing a child in a public place. That has also been changed.
That's on page 7. See it down there at the bottom?
Yes. The section on false alarms for the police has been removed.
Yes.
Article 2. It was page 31 at one time. Page 31. That item number 10? It was section...
That
has been removed.
As presented to the council currently, that has been removed.
The prohibited noises for construction and repair. I was hoping to move that from 7:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. in both section I and double I for... That's been changed as well.
Yeah, what is 7:30 p.m. on weekdays?
And then Saturdays?
8:30. Oh, you're right, it is
8:30. 8:30. I can work on Saturdays as well. Great, thank you. Then my changes are in there.
Is there any other discussion? Robert. First, a general comment. As Mr. Dallas stated, I found an awful lot of this to be really intrusive. And I appreciate the fact that we can't do a major rewrite, but we really do have real crime in Dunwoody, and we really do want our police officers focused on the real crime. When we have laws on the books, we expect our police to enforce them. So it is incumbent upon us not to pass laws that we don't want them to enforce, and I think there are a fair number of them in here. There's one that we haven't just discussed, but that I'd like to see us address. And it is in section... It is in section 3, which I actually don't see in here at the moment.
Which article?
We are in Article 1, General Prohibitions, section 3.
Go further past the number of changes.
So go past section... Oh, I see. This is just... Okay. Oh, there it is. Okay. Give me a second. So section 3... which is on page 3. Item number B, which is drinking in public. I would like to make a motion that we amend this to strike the sentence that says, further, it shall be unlawful for any person to drink any vitreous, malt, or other alcoholic beverage while in a city park, except during a permitted festival at other licensed locations within such parks. The Dunwoody Nature Center regularly has concerts in the evenings, and while they don't encourage us to bring up a bottle of wine or a beer while we listen, it's fairly common practice. Let's not have it be illegal. So I'd like to move that we amend it. I'll make one other amendment as part of the same section. There is a sentence in here that says, open containers of alcoholic beverage shall only be transported into and out of outdoor dining areas by the licensee's working employees as part of their work duties. I'd like us to amend that to say except as allowed by state law, because there is a new state law that goes into effect Wednesday that allows people to take an unfinished bottle of wine home from a restaurant. And we should allow that practice since it's a newly enacted state law. So those two changes I'd like to bundle together as an amendment.
The second one is there. If you notice on the front page, the front section, which is recommended by staff, change it. Page 633. It adds at the very end of subsection E, or by state law, where it's
authorized
by code or state law. So I believe that one has been addressed if you adopt it as presented.
Very good.
Yeah, I know.
One more.
Six.
Yeah, or by state law. Wait for a second.
The product needs to be by court in order to be able to touch around.
As per state law.
Not an open container.
It needs a second.
You have any more minutes?
That's my only.
Okay, is there a second to
second.
Okay, we do have a second.
Okay, discussion.
Do you want to do this piecemeal, or do we want to address this at some point further down the line? You know, it's wintertime, there's not that much going on at the Nature Center right now. Get back to the community and get some input on this before we just start piecemeal these apart.
There we go. Okay. Any more discussion? I would think that any city park, I think the other city parks, other than maybe the Nature Center or someplace, we might want to have this. And I was just wondering, Robert, if you, except during permitted festivals or at other licensed locations within such park, I wonder if the festivals are like the, you know, at the Nature Center. But I don't think I want the people at the baseball park, you know, drinking alcoholic beverages. That's my discussion. You know, at the Nature Center, it's fine. I mean, I've been there myself.
So. Yeah, that's right. I've seen many of you, actually.
Call me away, Chief.
I guess.
But I would just think that I think there has, maybe if we, is there some way that we could divide that up into the factor that, you know, Nature Center sponsored by, you know, organizations or something. I don't think I would, you know, I don't want the drinking going on at the skating park or at the ballpark, but the Nature Center, I'm fine with, because that's more of an adult area where, you know, people come and they, it's a donation system, and also there, I mean, run by funds that you donate. So I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I have a problem with the baseball parks and things like that. Can we make a distinction somehow? You're probably,
yeah.
I'm sorry, John. You're next.
Well, I was just thinking that we have professional staff here with us tonight, and would the police chief be able to weigh in on the fact, would this be an impossible item to enforce? Would it make your job difficult in the other parks?
Well, I think if you traditionally most cities have a prohibition against this in public parks because it has a tendency for teenagers to gather or other people to gather, or at sporting events where things can get heated and if you involve alcohol, then it can be a problem. But certainly I think it's within your purview to make an exception at certain events or functions or whatever along that line.
Thank you.
Tom's got his hand up. I'll take my
hand. I'm just going to, you know, again, you know, the initial look at it is the Nature Center is one thing, but you really want, you know, the guys over at the Brook Run Playground, you know, with a 40-ounce beer, that, again, you can't enforce running them out at that point. It's, I think we should limit it to something within. It can be a permanent festival that you don't charge for a permit or something like that, but you give a legal means to have it happen at a certain time, certain place, but not just a general blanket, go drink beer at the park. Again, the Nature Center is different than, you know, if you've got a three-year-old over at Brook Run and you see a bunch of people hanging around drinking beer because it's comfortable, even though we don't have any benches there yet. But it's a different set of circumstances. If you want to change the wording or
Robert. Yeah. We can decide to include this as part of an overhaul, right? We don't have to do this tonight. I will say that we've got a whole bunch of ordinances that deal with public drunkenness and that deal with inappropriate behavior in public. There are other ways to deal with inappropriate drinking other than a prohibition. And I will say that my kids play ball at the ball fields, and you know, on a hot summer afternoon, watching them play ball, you know, having a beer while you're sitting in the stands, I don't know that that's hurting anybody. I'm not sure that that's something we should prohibit. But I may be alone in that. So I recognize that. So I'd like us to vote on the amendment as I've presented it, and if it doesn't pass, we'll maybe come back and readdress it when we look at a lot of these that I think need to be looked at rather more carefully.
Any more discussion?
Yep.
Seven.
Thanks, Council. What kind of liability does that open us up for if we're allowing? Is it more risk for not having something like that in place, just as a general blanket issue?
You always will have the potential to have more liability, but we do have our governmental immunities. We've got our insurance, so the odds of having increased liability is not high.
Okay. Any more discussion? Okay, we'll vote on the amendment. Lenny, can you read us the amendment?
The amendment in this case is to amend Section 3B of Article 1 of Chapter 16 to take out the phrase "further totally unlawful to person drinking wine, smoking, or other alcoholic beverage on any city park except during festivals or other licensed locations within such parks."
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. No, fails. Give me just one moment. I want to amend the same section, Section 3B, and change the wording. Beverage at any city park except the Nature Center at a function sponsored by the Nature Center Committee.
Except at the Nature Center
at a function sponsored by the Nature Center Committee or
organization.
Instead of
Nature
committee.
Center organization.
I think it's called the Nature Center Preservatory, but I'm not sure.
Why don't we find out? Why don't we just exclude the Nature Center right now if you so desire? I'd rather not specify the name of an organization that I don't believe.
Well, because I think they have some functions coming up.
Yeah, but one thing is a lot left. This time, why don't we just say except at the Nature Center, and then we can further modify it at a later time. Because if you make this modification and that's not the right name, then it would not be allowable exception.
Okay. You've got to have a second to the amendment before we have any discussion. Is there a second? No, the amendment's been seconded. Discussion.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be easier to ask that the Dunwoody Nature Center get a permit for the future upcoming events? And that would allow them to allow alcohol in the park during that permitted time and wouldn't need our action here tonight.
Are you just thinking about a blanket permit?
No, the law currently says what we just are about to pass is that if you have a permit, you're allowed to have alcohol. Would it not be easier to have the Dunwoody Nature Center get a permit on a daily basis for those events in which they have concerts, those 5-10 times a year?
Hey, Robert. If my memory serves me correctly, we passed a permit fee schedule already, and it costs thousands of dollars to get a permit. Hundreds of dollars during the week and thousands of dollars on Sundays. So if they decide to have a Sunday concert, they're not going to be getting a permit because we've priced them out of the market.
My discussion, I tend to agree with that just from the standpoint of the permit, John. I just think that they're a volunteer organization that gets funds from citizens. I don't think we need to charge them for a permit. Any more discussion?
Adrian. This is just about the Nature Center. I also want to bring up about the farmhouse, because there have been events at the farmhouse where there have been alcoholic beverages consumed. In fact, we need a ribbon cutting there. So that is something else that's going to have to be included in that amendment.
Right. Yeah, the farmhouse is private property. It's not a city-owned facility. They can do what they want. Although, in theory, they need to have a permit. So I hope they've put some money aside.
Any more discussion?
Yeah, just Jeff.
The thought behind this, I believe, is correct and good, trying to make sure that we allow our citizens to do what's already being done. I'm just worried that it's opening a Pandora's box on the enforcement aspect on a number of issues. I'm concerned about this.
Any more discussion?
Continue what John said, you're looking at it here, what you leave yourself open to without closing this. I mean, I think you could look down the line at amending the fee structure for certain events or something like that, the permit structure, but right now, if we leave it too broad, you're opening yourself up.
Okay, again, my concern here is that the Nature Center has numerous fundraisers, and I get an advertisement on them all the time, and I don't want to curtail them from continuing their good work for all the folks here. I use that area myself, and I know a lot of kids do, and a lot of adults do. But I would like to see us at least have a waiver in there, an exception in there for the Nature Center at officially sponsored functions to have the right to, adult citizens have an adult beverage. Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll vote on the amendment. The amendment is?
If I understand correctly, the amendment is to add, after the term except in the city park except, the at the Nature Center, the function sponsored by a Nature Center organization.
Okay. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed? Motion passes 3-2. The amendment passes 3-2. Now, is there any more discussion on Chapter 16, Offenses and Violations? Seeing none, we'll vote on the original motion as amended to adopt Chapter 16, Offenses and Violations for the City of Benwoodie Code of Ordinance. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Passes 5-0. Lenny, when you get all caught up, could you read the second read on item I-3, please?
Give me 1 second. I-3 is an ordinance. 2008-1257, an ordinance amending Chapter 15 of the City of Benwoodie Code of Ordinances by changing the requirement for documentation of gross received income.
Okay, do I hear a motion to adopt the amendment to Chapter 15?
So move.
Second.
Okay, a motion's been made and second. Council, would you like to explain the amendment condensed version?
The original past version required the business to submit a federal income tax statement, which many businesses are national, and what they make in other states is irrelevant to us, so we decided that we would allow or amend it to make a state income tax the preferred method of submission for determining income here.
I think at our last meeting, Ms. Tuttle will explain that to us. Anybody need it explained again? Were you glad to get somebody up here to do it?
No.
Good. Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll vote on the amendment to Chapter 15, Business Occupation Tax and License Regulations. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same side. Motion passes 5-0.
Lenny, when you're ready. I-4, please.
I-4 is an action item for discussion of approving the final contract for loan engineering for Public Works Services for the City of Dunwoody. This is deferred from December 18th council meeting.
Do I hear a motion to approve the final contract with Lowell Engineering?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion?
Yeah. What I'd like is to have Lowell come up and talk to us about this and then give us an opportunity to ask them some questions.
Peter, do you want to be the man?
Yes.
Man of the hour?
Richard.
Sorry.
Thank you.
For everybody's information, this is Richard Meehan, and he is Public Works Director for the City of Denver.
This is, and I'm not sure what has been presented to the council before as far as our contract, but this contract is basically for the operation of the Public Works Department for the coming fiscal year. And there's a couple parts to the way it's structured. One is the base contract, which is for the actual Public Works staff itself. And then within that, there's, in addition to that, there's allowances within the contract, both for the maintenance work and for some unit prices for different items that will be decided upon by the city manager and by with Public Works staff as far as work authorization. So it would be more of managing a Public Works budget as opposed to putting it into a lump sum contract.
I've got some comments. The wording in the agreement, I think, is fine. I didn't find any wording, you know, I think it's a pretty standard agreement. It's a work for hire, and I think that's all pretty clear. The areas that concern me are on the fee schedule page.
Yes, sir.
The first thing is that we're paying an awful lot for your services. I'm sure you are a very valuable fellow, but it's $258 an hour, day in, day out, all year long. It's over $500,000 just for a director.
It's more than just the director, because it's all the staff. There's a full-time administrative staff, there's two part-time deputy directors, and there's the rest of the engineering staff that works for us on a part-time basis.
Okay, we'll see. So I see that that's a support staff. So help me here. A few items down, it says there's another $75,000 for street maintenance management. It's not for doing any street maintenance. That's down here in the stuff that's excluded from the bid.
No, I believe the street maintenance, the street maintenance management is intended to be the actual street maintenance itself, is what the intent is.
So help me, what is street maintenance?
Street maintenance is the day-to-day picking up trash in the street, cleaning leaves, minor sign repairs, minor pothole patching, that type of day-to-day stuff that our crews have to do just to keep the city clean, functioning.
All right. Again, I don't want to give you a hard time here, but there's a separate line item for street lights and signals and street signs. So that's not covered in street maintenance. And it says in here that pothole repair is to be billed separately every time you do it.
We'll get Warren.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we changed the rules not since the last time you've seen this, but since we initially discussed it. The items that you see the title up on the Public Works base bid for $772,889, that is the only amount that is billed on a monthly basis that they get as per the contract. Everything else that you see in the 470 and the as directed services and the plan preventive and maintenance unit costs is all just in our budget, and those items are controlled by myself and the finance staff with the advice and advice of the Public Works. So the only money that we're obligated to pay low is the $772,889 split by 13 months.
That's not clear, I don't think, unless I missed the sentence. It looked like this is a contract for $1.24 million.
If you look at the schedule of values, which is on the next page, it shows that
The 772 is the total contract value, and then each of the months, on an equal basis, we've divided it out, and it's about $59,000 on invoice for the labor, the GIS interface, the analysis of the streets and infrastructure, and the motor vehicles that they're providing to us. We also negotiated with both of the vendors that have vehicles that at the end of the term, that the vehicles are ours, and they're paying, we're paying for them through the contract, but then we will get the vehicles at the end of the deal, if we terminate the contract.
One of the things, Robert, to the council, and Warren, if you probably just stand there, that initially we had a set amount that we were going to pay, which was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1.2 or 3 million. And rather than do that and say, well, we were going to pay them $200,000 for street signs, and then we found out we didn't really need $208,000 for street signs, we'd be sitting there paying for things that we weren't getting. So to alleviate that problem, we put the money in the hands of the city manager where he can move things if he has to, where he sees that he needs to move more up and down. He can't move left or right, but he can move it up and down. Mm-hmm. That he could adjust from there, and we would not be paying for anything that we weren't getting. So we would be paying for actual cost of these items. Now, the parks and recreation, that's going to be a pretty set fee, because that's just the way we've seen it. And that's for O&M right there. This traffic signals, $208,000 originally, that's what we were going to pay for engineering. And we changed that to give the city manager the flexibility and not pay for anything that we weren't going to actually receive. And then the costs down here are the cost per unit cost. And we did that so that everyone bidding had an equal playing field. And that way we could evaluate each bidder equally. And as you'll notice down there on the budget, when you get over later on the budget, you'll see $175,000 for pothole repairs. That boils down to about 42 days of pothole repairs with a 5-man crew. And that's just probably about 40 days more than we had this last year. But I think that's the aspect. Instead of doing it in a lump sum, we tried to do it on a pay-as-you-go basis, with these figures down here being the maximum. These are the maximum unit costs. There's a good possibility that the unit costs won't go up to that level. And Richard?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
So I think I'm getting what you're saying here, but let me ask a question just to make sure. There is a $208,000 item for maintenance of traffic signs, traffic signals, street signs, and street lights. If a traffic signal needs to be repaired, this is presumably the budget out of which that comes.
Yes.
How much will it cost us to repair that traffic signal? Because I don't see that on a schedule anywhere. You could replace one and send us a bill for $208,000. I mean, that's an exaggeration, of course. But help me understand how it is.
You only do that once.
Yes, right. But then they'd only need to do it once.
One of the issues is that each traffic signal needs different levels. You could be replacing a light bulb, which is sending a crew with a truck that's a couple hours worth of work, or you could be cutting in a new detection loop, which could be a day's worth of work, or you could have a whole, like you say, a wholesale change. Now, a wholesale upgrade to the signal would probably come more out of capital budgeting than out of this maintenance. This is more for making sure that everything's working. If a signal goes down, getting it back up and running, replacing light bulbs, maybe some loop repair if it's deemed to be a critical loop to the operation of the intersection.
And Councilman, I think the advantage of doing it this way, and this is an excellent example of this, is what we're paying for in the top of the contract is the talent to be able to assess these situations and give us the most cost-efficient and effective solution to the problem with no financial incentive to do so, to do otherwise. So the way that I'm going to be, we'll be setting up specific measures as we go along, but one of the ways I'm going to be measuring this contract is that at the end of the year, if it cost us more than it should have to do some of these duties, or we're not using the most cost-effective methods, then we've got the wrong people in charge of giving us the expertise to do this, and that's how they're going to be measured on whether or not they get the 90-day notice letter or if they continue to work for us for a long period of time.
Let me ask one more question here.
There's a cost in here for laying New Street, and it's a per square foot, I think, cost, or per square yard cost for repaving.
Yes, sir.
There might be LARP funds available, which basically the state gasoline tax goes into a big state pot, and they hand out money to municipalities and counties, and that goes to pay for a large part of the cost of repaving. How does LARP play into this fee? Is that just something we would apply for, we would get, it would help us defer the cost to you? Is that the way that works?
I just want to make sure, from a conceptual standpoint, any of these costs that are on the bottom, and also anything that's as directed, except for the base bid portion that we described before, is going to be just managed by this staff. So we're going to do it two different ways. One is that we will apply for the yearly LARP assortment, and we'll get what we get as to number of lay miles on certain roads. When you get those LARP funds, we do have to pay a little bit, I think, as you alluded to prepare the road, and then the state pays for the rest of that, and then we manage that process. We had no additional cost to us because they're already on contract and it's in the top section. But for that project, let's say beyond the LARP funds, and we decide we want to do an extra two streets, the way that process is going to work is that we're going to have an evaluation that we've already paid for in section one of all of the assets and streets, with a critical needs list of saying, you know, these are the worst first, and we go down. So if we're saying, okay, well, we have enough funds to be able to do, say three major residential streets, the way the process will work is Richard and his staff will come to me and say, we're going to be doing our yearly paving. Here's the list of the streets that we need to do. Here's what we estimate the cost to do. We'll get with the purchasing manager. They'll go out based on the specifications that they'll give us on those streets, and we'll get bids on that work. And then what Richard's job is to do is to help us select the best vendor out of the three and then manage that process to make sure that the paving is done properly, certify it, and we're done. So no engineers won't necessarily, they're not going to be bidding on anything, really, on any of our projects. So they're just managing these types of things. So there's really, there's no incentive to, on the financial side for their benefit, other than just to do a good job for the city, to keep working for us, to keep getting that high rate that they're getting.
One other point, too, is that under this, we can package work for actual bidding out by the city, and it's required by the city that any work on package over $20,000 has to be bid out. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be necessarily done at these unit prices. These are more for emergency repairs, that type of stuff. If we have to go, if there's an accident or a spill or something, we have to go out and repave a road. That, on an emergency basis, those are establishing some preset unit prices for that. But we would expect to bid out a lot of this work.
I'm satisfied with that.
Okay. Richard, in just a couple sentences, would you just tell us what work you've been working on, what you've done so far?
So far we've been doing a lot of evaluation work in the city. We've gone through every road. We've had our field personnel go through every road in the city, note any potholes, bad pavement conditions, signs that are missing, signs that are old, signs that are not hanging right, curb and gutter issues, sidewalk issues. And we've got a whole list of those. So what we're doing now is we're preparing work orders for once we get into January to have crews out to start to repair that work and prioritize that work. We'll be getting with Warren on that to determine what the priorities are going to be for which things get fixed. Some of it will develop into bid packages that we'll put out for more of the major stuff. A lot of the minor work, like with the signs or the traffic signals, will be out there starting on Friday, actually, with our guys fixing a lot of the little things that we can get knocked out real quick with just under our, that doesn't take much effort. That's just nagging things that we can just get knocked out of the way. So that we've been doing a lot of coordination with DeKalb County, Georgia DOT, ARC, trying to get up to speed with them, get to know those folks. Starting to figure out the bid processes. We've actually worked on, with John's help, of getting a Safe Routes to School sidewalk grant package submitted to Georgia DOT for Kingsley Elementary School.
That's it, just getting up and running, you know, a lot of just getting up and running type of activities.
How many work hours do you have basically today?
We identified on all the roads, I think it's around 240 issues. Now, that's not going to necessarily generate, some of those work orders will be combined, so it's not necessarily going to be 240 work orders, but we identified 240 items on the streets just with a more or less a windshield survey of the streets. We actually walked the major streets because you can't drive them, but in the residential areas, we did it more as a windshield survey, and when they saw something, they got out and photographed it, identified it, marked it, so... and that was just on the roads. We've also gone and visited every single traffic signal as well and generated a laundry list of, I think, about 40 or 50 items on out of the 52 traffic signals as well that we're going to be starting to address. A lot of them are minor issues, bulb out type of stuff. There are some more major things like old equipment or loops that will be a little bit more, we'll get with Georgia DOT, see what they can help us out with, but as far as... you know, it'll take a little bit longer to get some of those issues taken care of because obviously they're going to be more complex.
First, thank you so much for helping me with the state Safe Route to Schools grant. It was $500,000 that we're applying to the state DOT to improve sidewalks up and down North Peachtree Road from Mount Vernon all the way to Tilley Mill. So thank you. It was a lot of work. They really should be commended for that. I know there's also a state money that was available for the Georgetown area to replace street lamps. I guess you're working on that?
We're working on that, yes.
And then can you give me a little bit of information how you're going to be synchronizing traffic lights? Is that a long-term plan, or are there things that you can do in the short term to alleviate traffic?
A lot of it's a long-term plan, and a lot of the areas right now around 285 in the Georgetown area and around Ashford Dunwoody, where most of the coordinated signals are already being covered under a statewide signal timing plan, and there are already coordination going on with those. And what we have to do is work with the Georgia DOT and their contractors who they have under contract to do that to make sure that they're keeping up with it and work with that. A lot of the other intersections, as far as getting other systems on board, a lot of that is a long-term plan to do that, involving getting the traffic data and seeing what is going on right now to help that. And then, of course, even doing that with isolated intersections, looking at retiming. Usually it's a annual thing where we go through the traffic signals and look at retiming, either 1 to 3 year cycle of going through the traffic signals and looking at retiming. So,
thank you.
We also get an update on the $1,700 a lane mile for the default.
Yes, and we've been discussing this with Warren. Again, that's right now a maximum cost that we have to get something in place in case something happens right now. The intent is that we would look to do an RFP to bid that out to get a permanent price. We just need something in place in case something happens Friday or within the next couple weeks until we can get a bid out for that. And that also anticipates, that number also anticipates a worst case event. There's the process, as with the others, of when we get, if we're notified that a storm is going to be coming or is anticipated, we'll get with Warren to work on a level of effort and refine an actual bid for that, and then the anticipated level of effort that's going to be needed for that particular event that's coming, which should be less. This defines more maximum cost to the city for that.
You can bid that out ahead of time, not in this point.
We can bid, well, what we do is we will do like an annual bid where for an on-call contractor for that.
As you well know, Richard, that's my hot button item.
Yes, I know.
I used to work on that crew when I was there, and that is the final price. I'm going to be the first guy out buying a truck. Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay. Anybody have any other questions of Lenny or the city manager? Lenny?
Yes.
Richard, any of you got any questions for Richard?
I don't.
Okay. Brian, do you have any? No. Okay.
Okay, no further discussion. Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome. Thank
you. We'll vote on the motion to approve the final contract with Lowell Engineering for Public Works for the City of Dunwoody. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 5-0. Lowell Engineering, we're glad to have you as part of the city workforce.
Welcome.
And we look forward to a long relationship, and a good relationship. Okay, Lenny, moving right along to item I-5, please.
Item I-5 is the ordinance 2008-1253. This is the first second read. An ordinance granting Comcast of Georgia 1 LLC a franchise agreement to provide cable for the services to subscribers to the city boundaries. Grant is right to the city's public rights and way in relation to provision of services, providing for associated franchise fees, and for other purposes.
One thing. Let's get a motion on the floor. Can we get a motion on the floor? Okay, we have a motion to approve the ordinance granting Comcast Georgia a franchise agreement and second discussion. City Council.
My attorney is, I've been trying to get a hold of the Comcast guy, haven't talked to him, so what I just passed out is what I just emailed him and said, well, this is what we'd like. We haven't talked about any of these specific ones from the ones that they originally gave us. We don't need to actually approve this. At this time, we need to have it actually signed, preferably by the end of January, so we can get paid for December. But there is no absolute rush to get it at this meeting if you'd like to go forward.
Robert, I'd like to move that we defer this. This, we've just now gotten it, right? This bears no resemblance to the version that we got 4 days ago, right?
No, it's, well, it does. There are several complete sections that have been totally changed.
Right, right. So
it is different.
It's different, and it hasn't been approved by Comcast.
No, it's not. Right.
So there's no point in us acting on this tonight. Let's defer this until we have a chance to read it. Yes, I move that we defer this to another meeting.
To defer would be the next meeting.
To the next meeting, right. Defer to the next
meeting.
Okay, amendment's been made to defer this to the next meeting. It's been second. Any discussion? I think it's prudent that we do that since we haven't had time to look over this. And it's not time sensitive to the point where it's burning holes in our shoes. All those in favor to defer this until the next meeting, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. The item I-5, Lenny, is deferred until the next meeting. Vote 5-0.
He's gonna film the public here.
Okay, the next item, new business is public hearing. Do I hear a motion that we go into public hearing?
I move that we go into a public hearing on the city budget.
Motion's been made and second that we go into public hearing. There's no discussion on that motion. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Okay, we are now in public hearing. And we will start off with the city manager. Warren, you got the floor.
Thank you. Honorable council members and citizens of Dunwoody, it is my pleasure tonight to submit to you the first budget for the city of Dunwoody. It is awe-inspiring to consider the thousands of dedicated citizens and business leaders who spent countless hours working passionately to create the great city of Dunwoody since the 1970s when incorporation was first proposed in the Georgia General Assembly. All of the blood, sweat, and tears have culminated in the incorporation of the newest city in Georgia, the city of Dunwoody. Given the monumental struggle for local control this community has overcome for the past 30-plus years, it is humbling to serve as your city manager. I look forward to presenting many budgets to you over the coming years, and each of those budgets will build upon a commitment to superior service and fiscal responsibility. Dunwoody is a premier community, and our future depends on our financial stability. The fiscal year 2009, which runs from January 1st, 2009 to December 31st, 2009, budget is a challenging budget for two reasons. One is the economic downturn. Nationally, regionally, and locally has destabilized traditional revenue sources for local governments, which limits our ability to deliver high-quality services that cost a significant amount. And secondly, there is no history for the city of Dunwoody, and therefore a number of assumptions and well-laid plans are placed into this budget. We will need to actively monitor our revenue sources, our collections, and our expenses more carefully now than at any point in our future. With all of that said, the fiscal year 2009 budget as presented collects enough revenue to support a high level of city services without any increase to the previously conceived millage rate of 2.74 mils. That is what the budget is based off of, and later in the year is the time that y'all will actually adopt the millage rate for the city. So that will not be adopted by virtue of this budget, but we are projecting revenues based off of that number. This rate ensures that the taxpayers pay no more to the city than they have historically been paying to DeKalb County through the county's unincorporated special services tax rates. As you'll note, property taxes, franchise fees, and business license revenue make up almost 70% of our total revenue. The city will be utilizing tax anticipation note financing in fiscal year 2009 to level out cash flow problems that any new incorporated city would experience. We're estimating that the tax anticipation note will be approximately $6 million and will only be used on a draw basis to make certain that we're only paying interest on funds that we vitally need for cash flow purposes. On the expense side, the city is prepared to deliver services come January 1st, 2009 through an innovative set of partnerships with three private sector firms who will provide the city of Dunwoody with community development, public works, and finance and administration services. All of our critical staff is in place, and our citizens and business owners will not only see no drop in service delivery, but they will witness a dynamic and dedicated process of delivering high quality and responsive city services. Early projections prior to incorporation projected service delivery costs well above the costs that we are now contracted to spend. This cost savings, in my opinion, is due to the innovative approach of using several vendors to provide services instead of using one company to manage city operations. I think that in time, this model of service delivery will prove to be effective and cost efficient. As you know, DeKalb County will continue to provide our community with water and sewer supply, treatment and distribution services, fire and rescue, sanitation, and E-911 services for the foreseeable future. The county will also provide police services for a 90-day period. During such time, the City of Dunwoody will be preparing to go live with police protection starting April 1st. The IGA has been passed by the council and will compensate the county $430,000 per month for this service. Fiscal year 2009 will be an exciting year. Over the coming days, the city will add a finance director, city clerk, and municipal court clerk. A city hall will be chosen and built out for occupancy on June 1st, 2009, and a new police station will be built out for occupancy on March 15th, 2009. The city will be recruiting an army of volunteers to fill various boards and commissions that will regulate land development and provide the elected officials with advice, counsel, and recommendations. A comprehensive plan will be developed this year that will afford the community the opportunity to create the roadmap for our future. Roads will be paved, potholes fixed, curbs repaired, and signals timed properly. Our parks will be clean and safe, and our citizens, visitors, and business owners will be treated like family. The new city of Dunwoody will not be a replica of what has been done in the past. But instead, we will be an innovative, transparent, and dynamic local government where billions of dollars in commerce are transacted and families live a charmed life in a beautiful community. In the final analysis, the city will take in approximately $15 million in revenue and expend nearly $14 million over the course of this year. Including a $500,000 contingency in the non-departmental budget, the city intends to transfer potentially $1.5 million to fund balance reserve for fiscal year 2010 and beyond. This is a great start forward toward a fiscally stable future for the city of Dunwoody. I am eager for January 1st, 2009 to arrive so that we can begin to live the dream of residing in the city of Dunwoody. I'm excited to work with all of you to bring your vision and your goals for our great community to life. And if you look through the budget, we've presented a budget summary just after the transmittal letter that summarizes all of the revenue sources, the percentage of revenue, and then also the expenses. And of note, as I noticed, noted in the transmittal letter, that on the revenue side, property taxes, franchise fees, and business licenses make up nearly 70% of our revenue. On the expense side, police services represent about 42% of our total budget, with public works finance, administration, and community development coming in at approximately 14-15% for each of those categories. I think that the most significant thing to note when you consider on the expense side and from an overall fiscal picture is that starting a city is a unique opportunity, but also has some unique challenges. We have some unique first-year costs that came into this budget that we're estimating over time will save the city in upwards of over $2 million for next year. When you look at some of the things that we will not have to purchase twice, we'll not have to pay someone to do again. So a lot of the consultant fees and other equipment purchase and other expenses that will not be repeated. The other thing to note is that on the franchise fees is slightly misleading on your revenue, and that we are showing an estimate of approximately $2.5 million from Georgia Power that will come in fiscal year 2009. And as you know, when you did your franchise agreement with them, 2010 they will pay us nothing, and then 2011 will continue again paying a percentage of the gross revenue. So there will be a gap next year of $2.5 million that we're not collecting. That will be made up by a combination of unique first-year costs that will not incur in year two, and also we'll be starting to collect our insurance premium tax and bank share tax in 2010 as well. So from what I've tried to do in this budget is start to project out for 2010 to make sure that what we're starting to do here we are able to continue doing in the future. And I think that we can absorb all the costs of starting a police department and all of the other factors that go into creating a city from scratch, and we can do it in a fiscally responsible manner that will actually put money in the bank at the end of the year instead of creating a debt opportunity for us. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that y'all might have. But before I do that, I did want to suggest a few amendments to the budget. I think I've noted to you offline, this has been a considerable work in progress that started long before I got here. And that we do anticipate making several amendments next year as we go, as we learn, as our revenues start to come in, so that we've got it properly forecasted and maintained. What I would suggest to you all is to add $100,000 to the insurance line item for property and liability coverage. The budget needs to contain 16 months worth of insurance coverage. We are covered on our insurance from September, from the time that y'all were, I guess, sworn in up to the point of December of next year. So the money that's put in there is insufficient to be able to cover those costs. There also is going to be an uptick in costs once the police department goes live, and we'll be taking on the law enforcement liability, and then also all of our automobiles will be purchased all at one time, and we'll be having to pay insurance on those as well. So I think if you add $100,000 to the non-departmental, that will cover the cost of the 16-month period with a deduction for law enforcement for the first 8 months of the contract if you look at it on a 16-month basis. The other thing that was inadvertently left out of the budget, and I apologize for this, is there does need to be the creation of an additional special fund for streetlights. This is an item that historically is on the DeKalb County tax bill that will be coming to the city of Dunwoody as revenue. But we also pay Georgia Power on a percentage basis for the streetlights that we use. So the recommendation is to put $330,000 on the revenue side into that fund and $330,000 on the expense side. There's also an additional cost that we need to pay for the lights that are not on the residential bills, but they go to the city, suggesting putting $35,000 into the public works budget for that. We also have $60,000 already in here for the PCID street lighting. I think that will cover, but maybe lacking information.
I actually think that's duplicative. I think that $60,000 for PCID utilities includes the street lighting for those streets that aren't covered by the streetlight fund. I think that we've by putting that $60,000 in there for PCID, and just for the benefit of everybody in here, we all pay for, on our property tax bill, if you've got streetlights in your neighborhood, there's like a $15 fee for streetlights. That covers the cost of streetlights for all the residential neighborhoods. What it doesn't cover is the streetlights along Ashford-Dunwoody Road and along Perimeter Center Parkway. Those are considered to be for use by everybody, and historically DeKalb has paid for those out of the general fund. That's now going to become our responsibility, and I think that $60,000 PCID utilities covers that, so I don't think you need to have an extra item in Public Works Street.
Okay.
I think we're okay there.
That works. Also,
just a point of clarification. On your tax bill, if you'll take a look at it, it will show you exactly what you're paying for street lights. That's a pass-through item, and it's based upon the amount of frontage you have on your lot. That's how you're charged.
Right.
And I failed to highlight it, and I should have, because it is the most significant part of our expense budget, but I did want to just alert the council to some of the assumptions that we've made in the police department's budget, and it will help answer some of the questions, because it's our largest expenditure, and Chief Bergen is also here to answer any specific questions as well. And we have highlighted for the first time to you in this budget, I won't want to call it a final plan, because it's always going to be a work in progress, but for the fiscal year 2009, we have identified our organizational chart for the Dunwoody Police Department. Previously, we kind of laid out some of the management structure, but now we've added the bottom of the chart to let you know where we're headed. And the organizational chart includes the chief of police, one deputy chief, three lieutenants, which have been previously approved. But now it also includes six sergeants, 29 patrol officers, and that patrol officers will also include a community-oriented policing person will be a post-certified officer, and then eight civilians, which will include the police service representatives, which is your police records clerks, that handle any of the civilian duties we can handle to take those off of the officers. Property and evidence person, a crime scene technician, but also the reason that five for number is five for the records clerk, which may seem a little bit high, is that it's a requirement when you're in the GCIC system that you have 24-hour coverage, so that when you get a hit, and what a hit is if somebody, say, gets picked up on a warrant that we have out there, that police agency will call it in, they will call us, and within 10 minutes, if you don't respond to them, then you get into audit problems with the GCIC, so you have to have somebody available to pick up the phone 24 hours a day. So you really need five people to be able to run that on a 24-hour operation with people on vacation and sleeping and all those things that people like to do. And that really lays out from a personnel side. It is also a little bit more expensive when you're in a startup agency as compared to a more traditional police agency, because all the people that we're going to be hiring are going to be certified officers starting out. So the starting point of the range for the patrol officer, which is the largest section of our budget, is higher by average than it would be in an existing agency. So that's one of those kind of unique elements to our budget. The other thing that we have done that's been sort of a moving target that we've come to a decision on for recommendations on our vehicles. We had initially talked with the council about doing a pooled vehicle concept for year one, and then doing a fleet take-home policy for year two and beyond. There are a couple considerations that have changed. One is that we have confirmed now through the leasing, or I'm sorry, not leasing, but through the lease purchase, which is traditionally just a finance purchase, that we can go to 5 years for our police cars as opposed to normally it's three. So if we finance the vehicles over a five-year period, it actually, the costs in year one is going to be equal to what it will be in year two and three and four and five, so it'll continue on. The advantage to doing the pooled vehicle is just that you lower that first year cost half of what the second year cost would be. But eventually, the bill comes due, and year two, you'd be paying the full amount, and every year beyond that. And what we did was weighed a couple of considerations. One is from a recruiting standpoint, being that we're on a very short stick and need to be up and running April 1st, we felt like the take-home policy was an important recruiting tool that we needed to put in place immediately as opposed to making a promise that it'll be here a year from now. And the second consideration is as we worked through the rest of the budget and came to the numbers and we found that we were in good financial position, we were able to then say, okay, let's go ahead and pay for that now, get it going, and it didn't really affect the bottom line considerably enough to make our recommendation stick with what we initially conceived of. So the costs on a yearly basis is about $250,000 for automobiles, because what you're doing is taking all 40 vehicles, financing them on an ongoing five-year basis. So there's never a point when you do it with this financing method that you'll kind of take a break from paying for cars. And that's just, again, unique to most agencies buy a third or a fourth of their cars each year.
depending on their vehicle mileage, we're going to be buying them once, and then they'll all come due almost at the same time. So this will be a steady cost you're going to see throughout, so there'll be no surprises for 2010s. It's going to be expensive every year. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We also have our department heads here as well to answer any questions you may have.
Jen, I'm excited about the police department. Put a lot of work into it. Congratulations. I was looking at the equipment. Tasers. Will the police, will the Dunwoody Police Department be providing their officers tasers?
Yes.
Yes.
We will be providing tasers, and they will be operational April 1st, subject to the policies that Chief Grogan puts in place for their proper use.
And has the gasoline amount gone up now that the number of vehicles have gone up? Okay, I'm just wondering if it's effective.
Yeah. That's an excellent question. it may need to be adjusted because you get, if, I would probably suggest it in an amendment if y'all would offer us to up that from 83,000 to 100. About 125 probably would be more appropriate. That there is a certain cost reduction you get from not running each of the cars 24/7, but you've got double the amount of cars, and also on the take-home policy, you got the coming to and from costs as well. So probably recommend upping that from the 83 we put in here to 120 or 125. Also with the uncertainties of where the gas prices may be headed as well.
Right. Thank you. I'm looking forward to a high-tech police department. Everything I've heard is everything is going to be computerized. All of your traffic citations are going to be computerized. The police officer is going to drive his vehicle up to the station and download everything into the computers. I'm excited about the police department. Speed detection. How many vehicles will have speed detection?
I think we've... I think we initially looked at having four radars.
Chief, just a minute. For everybody's information, this is Chief Billy Grogan, who is the Chief of Police for Dunwoody Police Department.
Thanks, sir. I think we initially looked at four radars and two lasers, and this was prior to us deciding to move forward with all the vehicles, so we'll probably look at that and examine it more closely.
Okay. So is it in this price, or?
Yes, four radars and two lasers.
But you're thinking now that you have more vehicles, you may need to up that as well.
Absolutely.
Robert. One of the things that caused some citizen concern during the referendum period was what we would do in the event of a major problem. You know, we need a helicopter for search and rescue, or we need a tank to get somebody out of, a hostage situation or whatever. I assume that we'll put together agreements with DeKalb County or other local agencies to help us with that sort of arrangement. We have to pay them for that, right? And the cost of that, is there a budget for that in here?
In some cases, we might have to pay them, but in other cases, it's just a mutual aid kind of thing. And so we'll be working on that with other agencies, certainly.
Okay. Is there a need to budget an amount to cover the cost of any of that? Okay.
Take home cars. Are we thinking about establishing some limits on mileage?
Yes, sir.
I know some guys that work out of North Precinct right now that live in Griffin and places like that.
Yes, sir.
Do you have any idea of what kind of mileage you're looking
at? Somewhere in the neighborhood probably of 25, 30 miles, something like that, to the city limits.
See 180K in there for the station, the lease for a year. Is that for 9 months or March 15th? What I'm assuming is we've identified a place. I know we don't want to discuss where it is right now, but I'm assuming that place is not
there. Yeah, it's for a nine-month basis, and we've taken some assumptions on the square footage will be approximately 12,000 square feet of space, and we've approximated what we think the rent will be and came out with a budget number divided by nine. But there's also some other assumptions in there that the landlord will pay for, utilities and insurance and janitorial services as well.
Any thoughts on using
local jails versus DeKalb for short-term, long-term. I'd say budget in there for that, but I mean, the issue that I'm watching with the cities around us is if we take a guy down to Memorial in mid-shift, it kills one of our officers off the street for a long period of time.
Sure. I'm actually having a meeting tomorrow with DeKalb Sheriff's Office just to discuss that situation, and I'll also meet him with Doraville later this week. The problem, I think, with the local jurisdictions is we'd have to pay for that, and I think through the Sheriff's Office, it'll more than likely be an add-on fee to our fines.
The 10% add-on. One of the concepts that we're looking at, we're actually discussing this as late as today, is prisoner transport. And what some departments do, mostly the larger departments, is they actually have a prisoner transport van and a civilian that comes to, say, the point of arrest, takes the person, brings them down to the jail, so the officer stays within the city limits. One of the things I want to do is assess that over half a year basis and see how much time that we really are going out of the city, how many arrests that we're making, and then we'll come back with a mid-year adjustment on the transport van if it warrants it, because you are paying in that circumstance potentially for 24-hour coverage versus 12 hours. So we just want to get some history and statistics before we move in that direction.
Another one, I guess, traffic officers. We've talked about the radars and the lasers. We think about any motorcycles or bicycle officers for the congested areas, like around the mall or things like that, or a bike rack that you can throw in the back of the car.
Not initially starting up. Main focus is to get the department started up by April 1st with patrol functions and investigative functions. But certainly later on we'll look at other avenues such as that.
And you've identified, going back to what John was asking about, equipment. You wanted to carry tasers, of course, and stuff.
Yes.
Firearms, we talked about that. Shotguns or patrol rifles, are you going to fund?
Shotguns.
Shotguns, but no patrol rifles yet?
Not yet.
Okay. I guess the only other thing I driving around with the chief, we took a great tour of some of the demo here the other day, is looking at, and this is maybe off base with the public works issues, but the need for code enforcement to be backed up by some law enforcement, because we have a few areas that are very scary at that. I think the two go hand in hand sometimes, and I don't know where we put that budget, whether it be the police department budget or public works.
We do have the code compliance officers within the community development budget. They will work cooperatively with the law enforcement. You get into two issues there. One is from a backup standpoint, that will just be a responsibility, of the police department working with community development to communicate when they're in need of assistance. But the secondary consideration, too, is that the Dunwoody Police Department will have the right and responsibility to enforce the municipal code in addition to the state laws. So we're actually, instead of just having two code compliance officers, the way I look at it, we'll have about 42 that will be, within the city, with able to write citations and get out of those
things. The only other thought I had is just with the uncertainty of the budget, too, is there any way you think we can flatten that organization? I mean, we've got a big command staff there. Is there any way to...
I don't see a way to flatten it and
put a position on hold or like a lieutenant.
I don't see a way to flatten it and be as effective as we need to be and provide the necessary coverage from a supervisory standpoint. I think it's important to be structured like that.
Okay. And the 12-hour shifts, I'm assuming that I see six patrol officers. We're going to have bodies on the street.
Yes.
And the lieutenants, will they be responding to calls as needed, or will they be...
They will manage the shift, but obviously if we're busy and need them to respond, they will respond.
Okay. And I think that's what I got.
You're just asking police really good questions.
I have a question for them too, but
you're planning on having some bilingual police officers?
Well, if we attract them, we will certainly do our best to hire them.
Would you have to pay more for this?
Some departments do, but most don't.
I have a question for Warren. Could you just define mobile communications for us, please? What that includes. Oh, I'm sorry, under all the budgets, it's a financial instruction.
Okay, I believe, let me...
and all
the yeah, the police, I mean, they're all about just mobile communications and cell phones and libraries.
In our RFP for finance administration, we said that we're not going to provide cell phones.
Yeah, the only people that we provided city-issued cell phones is the police department, myself, and then the city employees would be the city clerk, the finance director, and the police chief.
Is that what the in finance and administration you have $1,800 for?
It's just going to be for that one employee.
Finance director.
And that's including probably wireless card and data plan.
And what will the miscellaneous funds be used for? Just to give us an idea, because you have a lot of things included in your office supplies and small,
Typically, the miscellaneous is just something that doesn't fit within another non-item, but it's, everything that we purchase is going to be monitored and make sure that it's for the city's best interest.
For the public, you already have general supplies and materials, office supplies, books and periodicals, small equipment, and the miscellaneous.
Just things that come up that don't fit within another line item, that's where we take that from.
One more question that's police related. One of the things that the CAB has been doing, but which is not in this budget, is to provide a private security company to park out at Brook Run in an attempt to deter crime. They just sit there, right? They don't do any crime prevention. But because we're not going to have, Wackanut, or I'm sorry, whatever they're called, doing that, the need to patrol Brook Run is going to fall in your department, and your staffing plan is set up such that you're going to be able to patrol Brook Run and make sure that that's a healthy place for our kids to be.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Anybody can beat that fellow out there sleeping in the truck.
Yeah. I've got a...
I have nothing on police. I have something on public works eventually, but...
I've got a couple questions, Chief, while you're up there. Warren knows me well. He's heard me talk about it. I'm big for having a lot of people on the street and not too many people back at home. And I look at that 5 police service representatives, and Warren, you explained it somewhat. I just wonder, what's the possibility of doing something like we do with Public Works, where we have, in off-duty hours, someone that we have on call?
I'll take the first stab at it. Let me try and better explain what that position is, because the title certainly doesn't lend to an easy explanation. What that person will be doing, and again, the reason that there has to be a number of them is just to be able to maintain that 24-hour coverage. It's all going to be civilian positions, so these are not police officer positions. And what they'll be doing is providing the records management support for the officers, and then also handling the GCIC transmissions that need to occur. And then also handling any other duties that we can assign to them that would put an officer back on the street. So those positions are mostly intended to try and keep the officers on the street. And from a records management, all of the managing some of the data related to the tickets and also investigative reports and all the other data that we're going to try and accumulate and then make sense of to be able to provide for better management.
Yeah, we also have to, with all the records type stuff, for instance, if there's warrants issued for people who fail to show up for court, we enter stolen guns, stolen vehicles, all that has to be validated each month from GCIC, the month it was entered. So these validations have to be completed by somebody and sent in. But the main reason for the 24-hour coverage is it's a requirement in order to have GCIC access that we have someone there that can respond within 10 minutes. So they'll send a teletype. So the person will be sitting at a teletype machine. So they'll send a teletype or they will call once a hit comes in. And so we could not have someone on call for that.
Okay. Okay. I'm just big for having people with boots on the ground. That's how you do this in conjunction with the citizens, keeping their ears and eyes open on the street. Maybe back over here to this other part where I had a couple other questions on the police.
Tell me about recruiting. Give me just a quick synopsis of how you're going to be recruiting and the recruiting cost. I saw some figures in here, but how you're going to recruit the officers.
I guess it was Christmas Eve, we had posted on the city's website our application, and today I was able to send out a press release to a bunch of different media outlets, and we're trying to post it on some particular websites that police officers look at, and hopefully get the word out that we are in the process of recruiting. And what we're planning on doing the second week, and not next week, the week after, we've got enough applications in, so we're going to start the process with our physical agility test and an oral interview. So interview candidates, and then if they pass those two processes, we'll do a conditional job offer, and then move forward over the next several weeks with a medical screening, a polygraph, a background check, end up with a psychological, and then an interview with me before being hired.
Everyone will have a psychological test and a background check.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Going down the road, hiring privates is a lot cheaper than hiring sergeants. The plan down the road, there's always attrition. You know probably the percentage of attrition on the police force.
Typically, it's about 10%.
And so would we have a plan in place there down the road where we could recruit young men and women off the streets and bring them up through the various schools that are available in the state of Georgia and hire them that way?
Absolutely. Our goal first is to hire people so that we don't have the 10% attrition rate. We want to get people who are career-minded, who want to serve here in Dunwoody, and our goal is to hire people so that we don't have the turnover. However, that being said, we'll obviously have some turnover, and depending on when it happens, at what point, we certainly would look at hiring officers who are not certified yet, as opposed to hiring officers who are certified. I think it would depend on the number. It would depend on the applicants that we get. A lot of times you'll get applicants at police departments who are already certified. And you don't have the downtime with them as you would somebody who is a rookie who needs to go through the academy. So we certainly would have to look at those options in the future.
Okay. Car availabilities. Cars available?
We're working on that right now.
We don't suspect there'll be any problem with delivery and preparation in time for April 1st.
And Warren, on the cost of the vehicles, talked about being very conservative on our budget the first, definitely the first year because of the unknowns that we were going in being a one-time budget type. The cars, did you budget these out over a 5- and 10-year basis and they came out fairly equal? Is that what you're telling me? Versus buying half and hot seating the first year versus buying all?
I ran the numbers every which way, and the part that you can't get around is that if you're buying all of them within even a 2-year period, and you split it year to year, the first year you will see half the cost, and the second year you'll see the full cost. And then in year 6, you still don't see a reduction because you'll keep some of them on the 5-year financing, and then some of them will become new cars. So no matter what you do after you have the entire fleet of vehicles, it's the same cost every year. No matter how fast you replace them, no matter any of those factors, unless they're going longer than 5 years, which, take-home vehicle's not going to last 5 years. 100,000 miles is about the useful life of those cars. So there's really no other... The only other economical way to do it is to do fleet concept instead of take-home, which would reduce the cost on the front end of the purchase of the vehicles. And then there's some argument that the maintenance costs and gasoline and downtime for repairs is more significant with the fleet concept.
Okay.
Yeah. So the short answer to your question, the only way I could find to make it cheaper is just for year one cost versus year two and beyond. My concern is that if it hurts our recruiting ability, then we're not up April 1st. So it's going to cost us $430,000 to pay the cab an extra 30 days, and we certainly don't want to go there.
Okay. The cost of the cars, 5 years, that we're pretty much after 5 years, the residual value is minimal, I would presume?
Sometimes in police departments, you're able to take the cars after 5 years and come up with alternate uses for them. Most of the time, you're ready for auction, and you know, a taxi cab company will pick it up for $1,000 or $2,000 on a good day. Sometimes they're just to the point where nobody can functionally drive them. So it's a crapshoot, but I've never seen them retain value after 5 years.
After 5 years, they're our cars, correct?
Yes. This is it's called a lease purchase, but it's just purchase financing, and we're just spreading the cost over 5 years at a very low rate.
Is that through GMA?
Yes, sir. Tax-free financing.
John.
Obtaining experienced officers, one of the impacts I see is the possible retirement programs in which they're currently in. I looked at your announcement online. I'm happy to see it out. Can you tell me a little bit about the retirement program that the city of Dunwoody will be offering the police officers?
I'll let Warren answer that.
Yeah, we have not come to a final recommendation to bring to council yet. The concept that I think we're looking at is the potential to do a hybrid retirement program. Again, we're still weighing this, and the HR staff with our finance administration folks are going to provide me a final recommendation in the next week to 10 days because it affects all of the city staff. And one of the challenges that we have from trying to weigh risks and rewards is that we maybe have a recruiting issue if we don't offer the GMA retirement program to folks that may transfer in. And certainly that is not going to apply to officers that are county officers or state officers or in cities that have alternate retirement programs. So it is a limited number of cities, but a number of our competitors offer the GMA retirement program. The concern that you have from a financial standpoint is that creating a traditional pension program creates a financial liability for the city because once you start it, you can't end it. I mean, you are in it, and you've got to fund those retirements at whatever level is necessary by the actuaries. So one of the ideas that we've devised is to go to a defined benefit package package where we would set up a certain percentage amount that we would contribute toward an employee's retirement. They can split that retirement cost between whatever the premium is for the pension program and the defined contribution program. So say, for example, you have a $50,000 employee and you set a 10% limit. So they have $5,000 to contribute toward their retirement. If they join the pension program, and let's say that pension was $3,000 a year, they put $3,000 into that's their contribution to the pension, and then the $2,000 they can put into the 457 program, which is the defined contribution. Mm-hmm. What that does is it caps the city's liability at 10%, and what you write in is anything above that 10%. If you want to do that, then the employee pays for it out of their pocket. So you cap the city's responsibility. The one challenge to that is that if the pension program becomes unreasonably expensive, the city will have that responsibility at the end of the day to fund it if the employees are not willing to fund it. The IRS regulation is that when you commence employment, you have a choice to either enter the pension program or not, and you can't join in later. So we know at the onset what our enrollment is, not including any new employees that come on board over the years. I'm still a little bit conflicted on this, so I'm not ready to make a final recommendation, but we're strongly considering recommending to the council to keep the GMA program as an option for recruitment purposes.
Could be an option to have them, once they vest, that they would then be out of the program. There's probably a number of options that could be available in order to limit the liability down the road.
Couple more questions on police, then we may be able to move on. I don't actually see recruitment costs in here. Somebody referred to having seen it, and I don't.
It's in the professional services other. There's $67,000 in that line item.
Professional services other, $67,500.
That's recruitment. Okay.
My other question is, we're going to have some overlap, right? We're going to be paying the cab for March, but presumably we're going to need to have most of our folks already on board.
Yes.
And doing that stuff, have we accounted for that dual cost for that month? And presumably that's a that's something we won't have to endure again, so next month we would expect not to have to.
We anticipate March will be our most expensive month, and that could go up to as high as $900,000 for March, and then we'll start to see a reduction over time. You know, by the time we get exit the IGA, we'll take 430 off of that
okay.
total.
Okay. Thank you.
I just want to get back. I see a lot of some folks leaving. We had a presentation of recommendations by the city manager, but we had public comments open. And I don't know that we ever got to that before we got into it.
Yeah, we should probably
get good. That's a good point. Okay, the floor is open for public comments. Anyone who would like to take the stand on the budget or the police item or anything on that prevailing that we are discussing at this time? So that prevails anything with the budget.
Mr. Chairman?
All right, sir.
I'd like to congratulate the city manager for putting together a budget.
Sir, can you state your name?
Yes, Ian Ferdinand. I'd like to congratulate the city manager for putting together a budget that shows $1.5 million approximately of income over expenses for the first year. A couple of questions. We've already blown that by $200,000 today, so it's no longer $1.5 million. We've spent extra $200,000 that's not in the budget. What do we have to make sure that we hit that $1.5 million approximately in excess income over expenditures, and how do we control it to make sure that we do have that money available?
Warren, you want to start that? One of the reasons, I'll give you one thing, is that I'm not allowed.
No, you have to go. You can discuss this after the public comment period.
Okay.
I'll note your question and be able to answer it at the appropriate time.
We'll give you an answer, even if I have to come back and sneak back there.
Robert will get to
you. Anyone else? Mr. Dallas.
Sir. My name is Bob Dallas. Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem and members of the City Council. I, too, would certainly want to congratulate the City for coming in with a more than balanced budget. I would comment on a couple things. First, the take-home policy of the vehicles, as I've observed in my day job, which is the Director of the Governor's Office of Highway Safety, is a tremendous recruiting tool, and a lot of law enforcement like that. I would also, to a degree, echo Councilmember Taylor's comments about trying to plan the organization. And perhaps as we look to the Dunwoody down the road, seeing that it can be a safe city, perhaps not as many at the management side is needed, but I think your experience will probably show that, Chief Brogan, and certainly you're bringing in a wealth of experience. A couple things I want to comment specifically on other parts have to do with, first, the hotel motel tax, which represents 5% of the budget. That's $768,000. As provided by state law, the city is allowed to keep up to 3 of the 5 points collected on that, and the 2 points you're setting aside. I would strongly urge the city to open up the discussion as to how we should deal with those funds that are collected. From my perspective, and I've seen a number of models throughout the metro region, I do believe that the private sector model tends to work best. The one that puts heads in beds where the money's collected is the one that works best. A lot of times cities are a little bit apt to use the money for other purposes outside of that, and when that occurs, then I think it's somewhat unfair to the hoteliers. So as we set up that organization, I look for a healthy discussion amongst the citizens so that the hoteliers do have a strong say exactly as to how that funding is spent, because they're the beneficiaries of that money to get more people in there. And the better that they do, trust me, the better that we will do. I do have a question about the non-departmental $519,000 others, professional services other. I presume that's for attorney's fees, but can you clarify that for us? And I propose that hopefully we'll get an answer to that. And let me point out that I want to take a minute or two just to discuss this, because I don't know what other time to present it. It has to do with, as the developmental department moves forward with ideas as to where the city hall should be located, where a lot of the functionality should be, that we really have that conversation. I know that there's discussion now looking at the overlay districts. As a planning commissioner, when these overlay districts were created and in the work of the DHA, I don't know that there's an exigent circumstance that right now says it has to be completely changed. I do know, though, that when it comes to the shops at Dunwoody, Georgetown, Dunwoody Village, it is important that we develop a very comprehensive plan. And I will distribute to you, just as a planning commissioner, my idea as to what it should look like. But let me assure you, I am not king. And with that in mind, mine's one of many ideas, but a lot of great ideas out there. And I'm just putting this only to you because there's a lot of issues with respect to density, connectivity, the kind of businesses there that will allow us to take advantage of what the Metro Atlanta area is looking for transit options, interrelationships with the PCID, the perimeter center area. All these things have to come together. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of time for us to pull it together.
Right. Thank you.
I have 10 minutes. You have a 10-minute section. I'll have a 3-minute recess.
How many people do we have? How many more people do we have talking?
One, two.
We have 30 minutes allowed for all.
Okay. Well, I'll finish up, Councillor, in a second. But I just want to make that point that it's important we do involve the community in those kinds of decisions for our future development. And I say that as your planning commissioner, and knowing that the CAG County, while we've had no issues with it, actually has done a pretty good job with that part of it. So between that and the Convictions Bureau, I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you, Bob.
May I?
Sure. Come on up, sir. Can you state your name and address, please, sir?
My name is Jim McAsee. I live in the Woodlands. Or do you need my address? 5480 Colbert Court. I couldn't hear, I was right directly behind the speaker, what percentage of the total budget is for the police? Was it 42% that I said? 42%.
You answer that, you can answer. Yes, you're right.
So it's 42%. We're going to have 40 cars. And you said that you may beef up the speed detection. You got four initially, and then you think you might go
over. Yes.
What are you budgeting for income from that when you get it all done?
I'd be happy to answer that question after the public comment.
Yeah. We will answer that. It's in the budget. We'll answer that.
Okay.
All right. Rules are the rules.
42% of our total budget is police.
All right. Yes, sir.
My name is Rick Otmus. I live in Redfield Subdivision. First of all, I'd like to thank you for all the fine work you put in. I know you put in long hours, and I'm very appreciative of that. I have a question that has to do with funding depreciation. Many organizations use up whatever assets they have, and then when it comes time to replace them, they try and come up with a revenue bond going forward. I would like to propose for your consideration that you seriously consider doing a straight line depreciation of the existing assets that the community has, and fund those each year so that when it comes time to put down a new road, when it comes time to do some sewer repair, when it comes time to take care of some public facility like Brook Run, you already have the money in the bank rather than them trying to figure out a way in case you're in bad economic times. So, for your consideration. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it. Yes, sir. Joe.
Joe DeVita, 4961 Coldstream Drive. I want to speak tonight on the hotel motel tax. I had visited the a hearing, which was held by the State Department of Community Affairs, and they are very strict on how this, the 2% of the 5% or 40% of this hotel motel tax collected has to be spent to promote tourism and commerce in the region. Those funds are not just for local attraction, but it actually does have to put heads in beds. It does have to have some national advertising associated with it. I've witnessed four cities go before that board and have funds taken or recommended the funds be taken back out of their operating funds and be spent back to a 501c6 organization. And the Convention and Visitors Bureaus are typically 501c6 organizations. The reason for that is it's only a business advocacy group is going to ensure that those funds are spent in the best interest of the business community. The W Chamber of Commerce has been working with the local hotel and motel people. We've also at least have formed an organization called the Convention and Visitors Bureau. I forwarded a copy of that paperwork on to Brian Anderson. If that entity is not yet operating, the Chamber of Commerce would certainly like to entertain recommendations or participate in recommendations of how that organization be operated. The best thing to do is to bring on board all of the parties that have an interest in those funds, all the stakeholders, so to speak, the people from the perimeter district, the people from the hotels and motels, and all the other community people that are interested in how those funds should be spent. So I'm just I'm looking forward to having that discussion on that committee that's going to be addressing those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, one, sorry, one more thing. we have moved our Monday night networking meetings to begin at 5:30. And we've done this because many of our business community has wanted to attend the city council meetings. Now, many times we've had 15 or 20 people here, and sometimes 15 or 20 people at the Monday Night Social. So to make it easier for our business community to attend the city council meetings, and also make it easy for the city council people to come attend our Monday Night Social, we're now holding it every Monday locally here at the new Mudcats, which is formerly Corner Bar, and that'll begin at 5:30. And everyone in the city council is welcome. And also anyone that attends the city council meetings would like to meet with the business community on Monday evenings, that's 5:30 at the Mudcats, formerly the Corner Bar.
Thank you, Joe, for that plug for the during the carnival. There's no drinking in the park, so Joe, just remember that. Anybody else have any comments? Bob.
I come to phrase this time. We have another set of public comments at the end of the meeting, don't we? So yes. This is budget comments.
Yes.
I just like to address Bob Lutzman, by the way. I just like to address the full council and Warren. When you look at the budget, and we think where Dunwoody Yes was a couple years ago, with the hundreds of naysayers saying that it couldn't be done. I was privileged to serve on the IGA discussion board with the police force and heard the numbers that the county was throwing out, how much money per month the county spends policing Dunwoody. And I find that our services are going to be significantly higher and $1.5 million a month cheaper. Some pretty significant money that we're talking about here. So everyone on the board should be congratulated on that. And Warren has done a heck of a job, and I expect no less somebody from Paramus, New Jersey, my alma mater, by the way. If he can do it, I can do it. So anyway, I think it's a job well done. I think the diligence you guys have put into the miscellaneous parts of the budget and whatnot show that all the naysayers who spoke over the last couple of years that we've shown that we can do it right and do it well. I congratulate you all.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate the comments and compliment, and thank you for the plug from New Jersey. Anyone else? Okay. Do I hear a motion that public comment closed? Public hearing closed?
Just close it.
In that case, I will close public comment. On advice of counsel. Okay, now discussion by the council and the staff on the budget. I think before we start, I think there were some questions asked there, and I would we will try to answer some of those. I will talk first of all the cars going home. I will tell you that I was a big pusher of that because of one reason. It's called dollars and cents. I'm very conservative when it comes to financial dealings, other than going to Mudcats and having a good time. But I will tell you that I think that was the only reason we did it. There was no other reason involved. So if we can swing it by letting them take their cars home with a limited mileage, I don't think that will be a problem. 42% is the police budget, but I'll let somebody else get more on that. We understand the 40-60 split on the hotel-motel tax. We will be very diligent on that. So we will, for those of you who don't know, the 60% goes in the general fund. The 40% must go into the hotel-motel tourism advertisement, if you will, enticement to entice tourism in the city of Dunwoody. And with that, Warren, I'll let you have the floor to answer some of the other questions that popped up there.
Thank you. I'll try my best. I think the crux of the first question was how do we ensure that we meet our targets? From a personal standpoint, I guess my job depends on it, so we'll make sure we do. I think the key, especially in this unique scenario that we're in, is monitoring of revenue and expenditures on an ongoing basis to make sure that if we're off target at a certain point, that there are some items under my control that I can control those expenses and get us back to the level that we need to be to try and hit those financial targets that we've set in the budget of taking back possibly $1 million for fund balance, and then $500,000 that's set for contingency. That'll be at the council's discretion as things come up that we have not anticipated. The question on the professional services, I think in the non-departmental is about $519,000. And there's a number of other line items in there. And those generally include the fee that the city owes to Boykin for some of the startup consulting that they've done and are continuing to do for us. And then also a lot of it, our legal fees are in that area as well. From the police department standpoint, we estimated within the revenue budget $430,000 for fines and forfeitures. So that will be a combination of code enforcement, citations, and citations that the police department puts out. I believe that's going to be a very conservative number. But again, from a philosophical standpoint, what we've attempted to do on the revenue side is just aim low, and if we beat it, fines is not something that you plan for. Anyway, it's just the nature of the business that if we have an active police department, fines will be generated. So that's just an estimate that we're not counting on. And that's why we've done that as a low number. I think the suggestion is an excellent one on the, I'm talking about depreciated capital assets. One of the challenges that cities run into is that when it comes time to do a major capital project, you keep continuing having to take it out of current year's expenditures is not very responsible. So the first year is very difficult to do. I think in year two budget, you'll see a capital reserve fund that will be established. And we'll take some of that fund balance and put that into a capital reserve fund and then grow that on a consistent basis over the year so that when we do need to make a major capital expenditure, we can do that. As you all know, from a governmental accounting standpoint, at the end of the year, whatever's left in the accounts is drained back into the savings account and gone. Not gone from the city, but gone from those operating accounts. So if you left over with $50,000 for capital in fiscal year 2008, you got zero in 2009. Because the money's put into the general savings account of the city. So this provides an opportunity where these funds don't revert into fund balance every year, so you'll have a big base to choose from. And I think that's an intelligent way to manage. And I think I covered all the questions. If there's one I've forgotten about, please let me know, and I'd be happy to cover it.
Well, I think the gentleman had the question kind of on the ROI on the radars and the...
Well, we don't want to calculate ROI on those units. The reason that our...
Well, the question was asked.
Okay. Well, that's a chance for me to state this publicly, but obviously the traffic safety equipment that we're putting in place and the officers themselves are to provide for the benefit of the community a safe environment for homeowners, businesses, and the motoring public, and we don't really consider how much money we may make off of that.
Okay. Okay. Any questions of Warren while he's up here or anyone else on the staff? They're all available to you.
Yeah, I want to start. We talked to Chief Kroger a little bit, but I didn't get a chance to congratulate you on putting this together. I know what you started with because it was mine and it was one Excel spreadsheet, right? So you've done just a fabulous job flushing it out. It is truly impressive that we have been able to put this together and show a surplus in year one. And for those of you who haven't looked at this closely, we're projecting almost $2 million less in revenue in year one than CBI did. And that's because we've backed down all the revenue numbers to be more conservative, right? This is really a conservative revenue estimate. And, so the fact that we've been able to do that and keep spending in line is and create something that's got enough detail is a real testament to you. Thank you. I do have a couple of questions for Public Works when we get to that point.
You can go right now.
Go.
Cover Public Works or not?
I think we can bounce around. Yeah, free for all.
I've got, again, having said that it's wonderful that we've got all this money, I'm now going to suggest that perhaps we have some expenses that we might not have adequately accounted for, and it may eat up some of that surplus. What worries me in public works is two areas. One is the amount of money that we've allocated for pothole repair. You guys have estimated or budgeted for $175,000. The task force, the citizens' task force, estimated $400,000 for that same line item. And, you know, the difference is the number of days we would have crews fixing potholes, right?
Yes.
You guys have estimated about one day a week, and they estimated about 1 week a month. So I'm worried about that discrepancy. Help me feel better that we've allocated enough money for pothole repair.
Some of it may be the condition, when we get the condition assessment of the roads, and looking at what is actually out there and what is it that pothole repair and what is it is more, that may be another area with repaving as well. And part of that is what we'll be doing with the condition assessment that's coming on is to develop a long-term maintenance plan, ongoing maintenance plan for potholes that will give us a better idea of what it's going to cost long-term. We want to be a little bit more conservative starting out.
I suspect that potholes are going to come out of the woodwork, right? I mean, everybody who's been living with the potholes on their streets because they didn't expect the county to fix it is now going to be calling and telling us about the potholes on their streets. So we're going to have this massive influx of potholes.
I think it's somewhat of a policy decision. And one of the things I think I spoke to y'all earlier in an earlier meeting about is that all the problems weren't created in the day, and that we can't find a fiscally responsible way of fixing them all in year one. And that, so what we've taken is an approach where we think we can get obviously critical ones and make a significant dent in problems that are out there. If we threw $1 billion at it, sure, we're going to take care of a lot more potholes. So it's somewhat of a fiscal policy choice from a financial standpoint. So that it's not a magic number on the 170 versus 370. It's really going to be a choice that y'all will make in the end of the game. This is from the staff's recommendation. We think this will take care of the most significant problems, but also put a dent in a lot of the built-up problems that we've had over time. I think people, you know, my own opinion will have a very positive effect. If you put $500,000, we're going to have a very positive effect. So,
The only other thing that I had in public works, we've got money budgeted for parks, operations, and maintenance. But the parks have been really neglected for a long time. The Nature Center has dozens of outstanding work orders with the county. There's lots of work that needs to be done. And I worry a little bit that we haven't allocated enough money to start making some incremental progress on curing some of the neglect that's out there.
I'd answer it two ways. One is that we do have $167,000 for parks that's on the maintenance side, and some of that obviously is for the generic things of cutting the grass and doing the things that just to keep things status quo. But we also have at the bottom of the budget of public works $300,000 of unallocated capital. For projects, and some of that may be one large intersection improvement. If y'all choose to do that, it could be small incremental changes like adding benches at Brook Run Park and the dog park. It could be anything that y'all choose as we go along, in combination with the $500,000 contingency. So I think we can cover a lot of those things over the course of the year.
I can jump in.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Just a couple things, Robert, to ease your feeling there is that, you know, everything this budget, and you were in on the budget as much or more than I ever was, but was to be fiscally very, very conservative, you know. And when we ran Dunwoody S and the Wingate's right there, you know, we told everybody things wouldn't be fixed overnight, but it would get better. And I think that's the key. Is that things will get better. And, you know, we're not just going to throw some coal patch in a pothole and run off. When we leave, the pothole is going to be fixed. You know, I'm an old pothole fixer, so I'll be out there watching these guys. I'll be riding up there in the cab. No, I won't be done. But I just want to assure you that I think what we are going to do is going to be quality. And I think that's the key.
I think it's better to do a little less and do it quality than just, you know, and I know you agree with me. I'm just trying to explain that where we came from on the pothole repair and anything else that we did here as far as the maintenance. The parks, I understand as well as you do. You know, they're allocating a certain number of workers, a certain number of days in and out of season of the parks, and they're going to do the maintenance and, you know, trim the bushes a little bit better than what I think you've ever seen them trim before. And the minor repairs, you know, if we got a leak in a faucet, we're not going to, that's part of their job. They're going to be fixing the leaks in the faucet. Now, if the hot water heater blows, we got to come out, we got to come back, and Warren knows that it's got to come out of the capital thing. But I think you're going to see that improvement, but I think it's going to, you know, as we said when we ran for the city, it's not going to be fixed overnight, but it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And as I said earlier here tonight over there, I said, the services will be better across the board for the citizens of the city. John, sorry.
I agree with both of you. This is a first-year budget. The budget is rather austere when looking at the public works, the road maintenance. The shelf life of a road, if this budget were to put towards that shelf life, our roads would be in horrible shape in a very short time. We need to budget more money in the coming year. And if there's money available in this budget, we may want to think about putting it into that reserve fund for balance transfer next year. As far as the maintenance, there are a number of items that need to be repaired. Warren mentioned the park benches at Brook Run, which I think are woefully inadequate right now because there aren't any. The other issue at Brook Run is the fact that the stream running through has been broken. It's a huge investment that the county made for children to play in the playground, and it's been inoperable for a number of years. And I'm hoping that your maintenance budget would have some money to take a look at the water feature in the playground to possibly make that operational.
Comment, Richard?
We will look at that and see, evaluate what the cost of that's going to be and work within the budget to see if we can add that, to make sure we can do that.
Thank you. And again, the benches, there are no benches in Brook Run near the playgrounds. The county put in very low rock walls. And when I saw a grandmother trying to watch their grandchildren, it was sad. And I've been complaining to the county for months, if not years, to get benches. That needs to be evaluated, and we need to take care of some of the easy things that can make a big impact on our citizens' lives.
Took the chief on a little tour of Park Brook Run as we negotiate with the county. But it's just locally, I mean, chief, you can throw your oar in here. It's bad. It's a danger to even walk in there. I mean, we ended up with 5 pounds of glass in our shoes just walking through the place. As we move forward with negotiations with the county, you know, there are several things like that that they have left. John, how long has that been like that? 7 or 8 years? I mean, just totally unsecured.
Those buildings are wide open.
Yeah, and that's up to chief. It's just a hazard. I mean, there's you know, expanded ammunition and stuff like that in there. At the end of the day, we need to look at offsetting some of those things. Hopefully the cab companies up some of the money, or we are able to ease their trucks out of there or something on that order.
Don't hold your breath.
Well,
no, good point.
The only other question I got for Warren is on that switches gears on municipal court. Mm-hmm. That's going to be up January 1st. Do we have a location yet?
We are working to finalize it.
So
far we have Jenny's basement, but
yeah, the other option is you bring the DUI thing to his basement bar. It's not the bar.
We do have a viable option for
it. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other discussion? Okay, I would like to add my 2 cents that all you all have done in getting this down and being very conservative. You know, it's very easy to be a monument builder, come in and just start spending money the right and left that you don't have. But as I've told a lot of people, as I've talked to people in my district, you know, unlike the federal government, we're going to balance our budget. And I think that's one of the things that we have to temper as we go along here. As I explained to a lot of people, you have needs and you have wants. First couple of years, we're going to be fixing needs. And the wants will come along. And I know a lot of people relate to Sandy Springs, et cetera, but Sandy Springs is a different world, and they just started their fourth year, so we're in our first year. I think everybody at the end of next year is going to be able to sit down and say, wow, I see a difference. Because you're going to see police cars on the street, you're going to see people fixing potholes, and you're going to see a city government that will answer you, which I think is key, any way, shape, or form you take a look at it. And this young man sitting in front of you is the leader of that. So thank you, Warren, for your...
Thank you. I appreciate all your comments. If I may, before you move forward on to the reading the ordinance as a potential vote, two things I'd like to point out to council. One is that under Georgia law, in good practice, without an appropriation of funds, it's illegal to spend city funds. We have gotten in, I learned today, our first deposits have arrived. So there is six figures in our bank account. It's just over $100,000, but it is six figures.
I thought you had $6.
There are folks lining up that want that money. So what I would recommend to council tonight is for you to go ahead and pass a budget tonight. The budget ordinance is presented to you with certain amendments, which I'd be happy to go over with you at the time of the vote that we recommend, with the full knowledge that you are going to amend this budget, and it may be as early as the first week of January, and you're going to continue to amend it throughout the course of the year just because of the nature of the first year operation. So I know it seems to be a monumental decision when you're talking about $15 million or $14 million revenue and $13 million spending plan, but I would encourage the council to go ahead and take a vote and pass the budget tonight so that we have legal appropriations January 1st to start expending funds. Thank you.
One other comment I forgot to make a while ago. Somebody was asking how we're going to kind of follow this up, and it's Warren's idea, and I'll just reiterate that he's going to have a six-month review in June. I know he's already got dates kind of in his head to when that's going to go down, and it's going to kind of go off. How goes it? And that's going to be, take a good look at where we are and whether we have to make adjustments upward or downward across the board.
And I appreciate that. And that is with the three vendors, which is obviously an enormous chunk of our expenditures. But also what I'm going to be doing, which is different than my practices in previous cities I've worked for, is that starting January 1st, I'm going to be reviewing revenue and expenditure reports weekly as opposed to monthly. And then after, hopefully a shorter period of time, but certainly after 6 or 9 months, we'll start to look at that monthly, and y'all will also get some timely financial reports to let you know where we are position-wise. But I think it's critical from my perspective to monitor where we are on a weekly basis as we start off to make sure that we start off in the wrong direction. We need plenty of time to be able to correct those errors. You don't want to get into November or December and be $700,000 or $800,000 short, and you have no opportunity for making it up by being able to cut expenses. So we will be watching things very closely.
One more question I just thought of. I see George is over there, so I know you two can answer this, and Lisa, she's over there too. Have we done all that we need to do financially by 31 December to collect all the revenues that you want to collect this year and going into 2009, i.e. insurance premiums, i.e. anything else that we have to have out prior to 2400 on 31 December?
I believe so.
Again, on the miscellaneous fees, because $1,000 is a lot, and we have about $10,000 worth of miscellaneous fees. The $1,000 for each department in miscellaneous fees, they already have something for hospitality. Everything's broken down. I don't want each department to feel like they have to spend that $1,000, or we could buy a park bench for that. Is it possible to consolidate those so you have a discretionary fund instead, so they have to request funds?
Well, we'll be working under a purchase order system. So there is some internal controls that we can put into place, and I can certainly buy executive order, I can mandate that, you know, anything spent out of that account has to have my approval prior to expenditure. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
Maybe again,
he slipped out. Okay, with that, we close the public hearing, and we move along to item K2. Lane, could you read item K2?
Yes, okay. One second.
Snooze you lose, John.
Yeah, you docked my pay, I heard.
Item K2 is a first read of the ordinance to adopt the fiscal year 2009 budget for the county of the city of Dunwoody, Georgia, appropriating the amounts shown in each budget as expenditures, adopting the anticipated revenues for each fund, prohibiting expenditures to exceed appropriations for each fund, and prohibiting expenditures to exceed actual funding available for each fund. This is a first read.
Okay, there's no discussion on that. We'll move right along to item K3, please.
Item K3 is Ordinance 2008-1260. This is a one-read version of the same ordinance, a one-read ordinance to adopt the fiscal year 2009 budget, which funded the city of Dunwoody, Georgia, appropriating amounts showing each budget of expenditures, adopting anticipated revenues for each fund, prohibiting expenditures to exceed appropriations for each fund, and prohibiting expenditures to exceed actual funding available to each fund. For the authority of the charter, this can be one read ordinance and may be passed tonight.
Okay, do I hear a motion?
I move that we pass that as a one read ordinance.
Is there a second?
John? Second.
Okay, we have a motion made and second. And with discussion, we'll open the floor to Warren for amendments.
I hope I have all of them here, but the amendments that staff recommends from previous to this meeting and also the suggestions that the council has made is to amend the non-departmental budget.
Get us on the same page as you
were. Sure. It's the last operating budget. It's non-departmental. Just after police.
Okay, we could. Okay.
Not just after public works. Next time.
We're there.
Okay, to line item for insurance, property, and liability to be amended to $172,000 instead of $72,000. An amendment to $172,000. We'll also recommend...
Warren, would you go through, just give us a one-sentence explanation of those amendments, please?
The insurance bill is going to be $172,000 that we've negotiated for... The reason is it's a 16-month period as opposed to a 7-month period. And also police will come online a little bit later in the insurance process than it does now.
Okay, for everybody's explanation, that's 2009 plus whatever we covered in 2008.
And it's from the date of, I think, swearing in?
Swearing in, September.
The initial officers?
And that is,
The other recommendation staff has is to establish a new fund called the Streetlight Fund and to appropriate or to record $328,000 worth of revenue and to appropriate $328,000, it would be a wash, where we would take in money off the tax bill to pay for the streetlights and then pay that money directly to Georgia Power.
Is that going to non-departmental or what?
No, I think it'd probably be best to do that as a separate fund.
Okay.
Do you have a recommendation?
What is it?
You okay with it being a different fund or... Okay. And the third recommendation that staff has is to increase in the police department budget, which is in alphabetical order. It's right after municipal court, before Public Works increased the gasoline line item, which you'll see under other purchase services, the second half of the budget. It's currently listed at $83,125, and we recommend that be adjusted to say $125,000. That is all I have in my notes, but I'll ask my staff if there is anything that I missed, or it's not your last shot at it, but is there anything that I missed at this point, Chief? Okay. Did you want to hit on the radar? Do you want to just double that equipment cost for the take-home while I have the book?
Yeah, obviously.
Thank you.
The enhancement to ACF.
Yeah, the other enhancement would be to modify the gasoline budget within police services from $83,125 to read $125,000. Chief, where's the radar building? It's under equipment, a capital outlay. For the mobile and station radar. What would be the cost for those additional needs?
The lasers are about $25,000.
And how many would four?
We had four.
So basically double this? Is that what we
should do?
No.
Much. $15,000? Okay. The last recommendation, this was discussed before about the, from traffic safety standpoint, moving from a fleet to a take-home vehicle is to increase the line item under police budget, capital outlay. It's the last line item for equipment. And to make an adjustment from $120,205 to $135,205. Yes,
Warren, if I could, now that we've doubled the number of police vehicles, we're now increasing the gasoline, we're increasing the radar equipment. Each vehicle is going to have computer equipment. Have we budgeted additional computer equipment per each car?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think that was
calculated. Yeah, because we did it as a... per car.
Yeah.
Okay. Just want to make sure that you're...
It's in there.
Thank you.
Warren, you're adding a lot. How about states taking something out here?
I did that earlier today. Or not earlier today, but over the past few weeks.
Not a big concern.
The other thing I did want to just put into the record, the city will, if appropriate, put in the motion that any items that are paid for from miscellaneous line items will be at the require specific approval of the city manager.
Thank you. Okay. Council? Discussion. Okay. Just making myself better.
Just going to basically say, you know what, I think we should approve this tonight, you know, to be able to collect funds and expend funds, but with the full knowledge that it's stewards of the public's funds, so we're going to watch this on a weekly basis at least. And it is a moving target, and
you
need to make adjustments if you need to.
I fully agree with your point. I think it's a great point. We're not going to let things get out of hand here. Any other discussion?
Is there a motion to make these amendments?
I guess we've got the motion on the floor. We need amendment.
I move to approve Warren's amendments to the four amendments.
I'll second. Okay, we've got a motion now to amend the motion to adopt the ordinance as presented to include the changes that Warren has presented to the council, which included the changes in three, four budget items and the inclusion of the control of the miscellaneous expenditures. Okay, do we have a second on that?
Yeah.
We have a second. Okay, is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, we will vote on the amendment that to include in the budget the changes that were presented by the city manager, which, do you have them all, Lenny?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to give them to us?
Yes. Increase the non-departmental insurance to $172,000 for $72,000. Establish a streetlight fund, I believe, of $328,000. Up the police gas budget to $125,000. Increase the police equipment expenditure to $135,205. And suggest the miscellaneous line items require approval of the city manager.
Okay, just one thing, the $328,000 is an in-and-out budget item. It's a wash item. It's not a... Okay, all in favor of the amendment? Raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. The amendment passes 5-0. There were now any discussion on the original motion, which is to adopt and approve the City of Dunwoody interim, budget for fiscal year 2009. Scratch the word interim. That was my mistake. Any discussion? Okay, we'll vote. Lenny, you want to read the motion one more time for us to make sure we know exactly what we're voting on?
This is the motion on the amended now, one read ordinance to adopt the fiscal year 2009 budget.
Okay, all those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 5-0. Ladies and gentlemen, the City of Dunwoody has a budget. And I thank all of those who put in the many long hours of work. Okay, item K4, Lenny, would you read item K4, please?
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to adopt and approve the interim future land use map for the City of Dunwoody, Georgia. This is the first read.
Okay, that is the first read. There's no discussion on that item. So we'll move along to K5. Lenny, if you will, please. Yes.
K5 is reversed. Should we do the first read first and then the order?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Points well taken.
Okay. This item is ordinance number 2008-1258. This is a one read ordinance to set and adopt the fiscal year for the City of Dunwoody, Georgia, January 1st through December 31st, and for other purposes. For the authority of the charter, this can be approved as a one read ordinance tonight.
Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the fiscal year for the City of Dunwoody from 1-1 to 12-31?
I so move.
Robert, so move.
Second.
Do you ride more in the saddle, Robert, or what is it?
Let's just get it done.
Second. Okay. Is there any discussion? Good. John.
This item wasn't presented to council prior to the meeting. Could we have a discussion as to what we have in front of us?
I thought it was. I've got a copy of it.
The map itself?
No,
we're talking about
fiscal year.
Fiscal year. I'm on the wrong one. My fault. Okay. I'm jumping ahead. Okay. I want it over to you.
Okay, any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the one read for the adopt the City of Dunwoody fiscal year from January 1 till 12-31, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries 5-0. Okay.
Still don't have a copy of the map. How can we do it first?
Would you go on and read item K6, please?
Yes. Item K6 is also an ordinance to set and adopt the fiscal year for the City of Dunwoody, Georgia, January 1 through December 31. And for other purposes, this is a first read.
Okay, that's the first read. There's no discussion on that. Moving right along, we'll step off to item K7.
Item K7 is
Resolution 2008-1232. This is a resolution appointing municipal court judges to serve in the municipal court of the city of Dunwoody.
Okay. Do we hear a motion?
Move that we approve.
Motion's been moved and second that we approve the judges. Discussion. No, I guess I have. I just, point of order, counsel, the timelines on this as far as urgency is concerned, I guess if we're going to have a court stood up on January 1, we have to have a judge, correct?
If you want someone to actually have a court, yes. And we need someone that can sign court orders, arraignments, everything else. We really could need a judge, at least one, on January 1st.
Any discussion?
Go ahead, Robert.
Robert?
First of all, I think the candidates that we've got listed here, Rick Powell and Tony DeCampo and Tim Wolf, are all very well qualified. I think the process that was used to vet them was exhaustive, and I've got complete confidence in it. I have only one concern, and that is while we indicate that we're going to pay these guys $300 per session for the municipal court, it doesn't indicate what we're going to pay them in the event that they have to do, you know, an arraignment, or they have to do something that takes 40 minutes, right? A 10-minute drive followed by a 10-minute thing. You know, help me understand what the costs are for doing the stuff that's not related to the session.
The costs are only for when we have a session. Anything outside of that is part of the job.
Okay, super. Thank you.
John?
The judge candidates being presented to us are actually being presented by the mayor, who's not here tonight. I was hoping that the mayor could explain to us the procedure of the committee who made the recommendations, and then the mayor did the interviews, who then presented it to us. I have not received the resumes or the backgrounds of these candidates, though I do know from internet research that they are all basically judges at some point in their past, or currently sitting judges. I'm going to vote to approve these gentlemen. But again, I was hoping to get more information prior to our vote. If there's anything in these gentlemen's backgrounds or their qualifications that we're not aware of, we may be voting on somebody who we don't have the information of. Though again, I trust the mayor and I trust the committee. I was just hoping that it would be vetted to us properly. I understand that at least one of these judges being presented to us is currently working full-time. Is there any reason that we should not be hiring a current sitting full-time judge? Has that been explored, or is that any reason legally for
that? Let me ask the city attorney for that.
Legally, there is no impediment to do so. Of course, if he's working full-time, he will not be able to hold court where he's working during the daytime. There was some thought that we may have an evening court, at which, for the convenience of the citizens, and if that occurs, then he could very well sit for that.
Again, I don't expect to be in on every decision. I trust that the mayor is doing what he's, you know, and his committee is doing what they're supposed to do. And again, I'm going to vote in behalf of the mayor who's asked for this vote. I was just hoping for some background on these individuals prior to me voting to do so. I'm going to read the email from the mayor. Regarding the judges, I've once again asked a group from the court's task force to advertise and solicit resumes and to narrow down via interviews best fits for the position. They have spent many, many weeks performing this task, and my nominations follow their recommendations, three of the four that they have recommended to me. To that end, after live interviews done by myself with Brian and Warren, I submit the recommendations for your approval. And on his recommendation of the mayor, I will vote to approve this, though again, I've only seen one resume.
I share your concern. That's a very good point, John. They did their due diligence. I think they have searched it out well. I know the one gentleman is the gentleman that came before us as a city attorney candidate. If you remember him.
Right, that's the one.
And,
The other two gentlemen, I do not know. But I didn't know Warren either before he came here. But so.
That's worked out.
That's worked out. Yeah, that's worked out. But any other discussion? Okay, with that, we'll vote on the motion to make sure I get approval of the resolution appointing judges as noted in the resolution. And it's Judge Rick Powell and Tony DeCampo, hereby the judges of Dunwoody Municipal Court, who serves a term of 4 years. And Tim Wolf is hereby appointed the judge pro temp of Dunwoody Municipal Court to serve in a term of 4 years. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same side. Judges are appointed. We can start holding court. 5-0. Okay, the first read of the ordinance to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code. First read. Do I have any please? K-8?
Yes, sir. This is ordinance of the City of Dunwoody adopted in the 2006 edition of the International Property Maintenance Code, regulating and governing the conditions and maintenance of all property, buildings, and structures, and providing standards for supply, utilities, and facilities, and other physical things and conditions essential to ensure the structures are safe, sanitary, and fit for occupation or use, and the condemnation of buildings and structures are fit for human occupancy and use, and the demolition of such existing structures in the City of Dunwoody, providing for the issuance of permits and collection of fees therefore, and for other purposes. This is a first read only.
Okay, first read. There's no discussion on the first read. And the next item is K-9. Would you read K-9, please, Lenny?
K-9 is a one-read ordinance authorizing, among other things, the issuance and sale of a tax anticipation note. This is by authority of the charter, may be passed tonight as a one-read ordinance. Ordinance number 2008-1259.
Okay, that's one read. Do I hear a motion?
Motion that we pass the text in anticipation ordinance.
Motion's been made.
Second.
By Adrian and second by John. Okay, discussion? I do have one item on discussion on page one, first page, down under section one, findings. Principal tax anticipation note herein authorized does not exceed 75% of the total gross income from taxes. Now, I don't know what the definition of taxes is in this context, but I think for everyone's concern and information, it is a $6 million line of credit to TAN. It's a tax anticipation note. It must be paid off by the end of the year, by the way. But I just wondered if we are in violation of our ordinance there for 75% of the total tax revenues. Or can we use, is franchise fees considered tax revenue for this purposes?
I believe this is taken straight from the state code that has that requirement on the 75%, but as I'm reading it and scanning it, I believe it says would have been collected by the... I believe we are in compliance with that section and that finding that we're not going to exceed that level. It's going to include the taxes. It's going to include the personal property taxes.
So we are in compliance?
Yes.
So I'll tell you that we had a tax anticipation note attorney who specializes in this.
Huh?
He is the one, he has seen the budget, he has drafted it. He is the one that actually collected it all and went through it. It passed his review, and he is the one that actually drafted the resolution.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, we will vote on the one read of the ordinance authorizing the City of Dunwoody tax anticipation note as stated in the document that we have here in our book. It's ordinance 2008-1259. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes 5-0.
we now have money. Can I put that all across the board? Okay, Lenny, would you read K-10? That's kind of a... Can you get caught up there?
Yes.
We need to send out for drinks or anything for you, or what?
No, I'm still working on this, Ginger.
Okay.
This item is a first read of the ordinance, same ordinance authorizing, among other things, the issuance and sale of a tax anticipation note, first read of.
Okay, thank you. That's the first read. There is no discussion on that item. We can move right along and go to item K-11. Yes, K-11.
It's
1-1. Marine Corps rules.
Item K-11 is resolution 2008-12-33. This is a resolution terminating the moratorium in the city of Benavidea upon issuance of business licenses and alcohol licenses.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
I move.
Okay, move for adoption?
You bet.
Is there a second?
Second.
John, second. Okay, motion's been made and second. Basically, I think we need just a quick explanation of this. Would you like to provide that, Brian or Warren, either one? What we're basically doing here, so everybody understands?
We're based upon the request of council, we're going to lift the moratorium only on business occupational taxes and the alcohol licensing. The rest of the moratorium will remain in place.
And we are looking at effective when?
December 31st.
So that means that people can get their license on December 31st. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's effective. It's really lifted on the 30th. So
it'll be effective on December 31st.
Okay. Okay. I think that's a big key to a lot of people. And just... Bob just stuck up one finger, and I understand one day, but I think that will be very important, and we'll probably be busy that day. People will probably be coming in, but that's one of the things we wanted to start moving along, and so the business people can have their license, and also all the alcohol sales can go forth. Are there any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the resolution terminating the moratorium on business and alcohol license application issuance and keeping all the other moratoriums in place, raise your right hand. Close, same sign. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, last item is K-12. And Lenny, would you read that, please?
Yes, this is resolution 2008-12-34. This is a resolution adopting and approving the schedule of fees for planning and zoning in the city of Dunwoody, Georgia, as it attaches Exhibit A, and authorizing the mayor and city manager and designees to execute any and all documents necessary for the implementation thereof.
Do I hear a motion to approve? The motion has been made. Second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Okay.
Just wanted to confirm that y'all have the red line version that was provided to you tonight.
Got the delete sections out of it.
Jennifer, we'll be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, same here. Jennifer, would you just, is this fee schedule adopted from DeKalb County? Are we not, are we competitive in our fee schedule with everyone else around us?
We are competitive. This is not a strict adoption of the DeKalb County fee schedule. This is an analysis of 15 jurisdictions that we looked at. We are not the cheapest. We are not the most expensive. We are competitive with the metro area and most specifically with our most like communities.
I apologize. This is Jennifer Peterson. She's the Community Development Director for the City of Dunwoody. Okay, Robert.
Jennifer, last time we were talking about the ordinance that goes with this, we raised the question of what would it cost a homeowner for a permit to put in a $400 water heater or to put in a $2,500 air conditioner. Help me find what we would be asking homeowners to come and pay. to do either of those things?
I'm glad you asked that question, because you set my best example.
Right. you're a street man.
On your fee schedule, and I apologize for the small print, I got a little overambitious in my savatory endeavor. If you are to look at page 2 under construction permit forms as you go down the column, one of the red additions that was added this morning is called a component permit. Originally, when we put this proposal together, we were following the ICC regulations of basing your permit upon the value evaluation of construction and what you're doing. And we made the discovery this morning that if we were to apply that equally to all sorts of projects, there comes a point where your project is so small that the fee becomes a little out of line. The example to that was if we were to treat a water heater replacement the same as we treated new construction, the permit for a water heater replacement on a 2,500 square foot home was going to be nearly $300. That seemed a little out of line to us. So we went back and got creative, and what we decided to do was to create a separate process dealing with maintenance issues. So if you're in a home and you want to replumb your home, you're not doing a remodel, you're not doing an addition, you just want to replumb your home, that would just be a component permit. You're coming in and you're pulling a mechanical permit strictly for plumbing. It's a flat fee of $50 per permit, and then there's a $5 charge per fixture. So you're paying for the scope of what you're doing. So my example is, under the previous proposal we would have given you, it was going to be $290 for that permit. Under the process we have in front of you tonight, it's $55. If you were to go pull this permit under DeKalb County, it would be $70.
It still seems like a lot of money.
I understand.
That's for a hot water heater?
Yeah. No, that was $2,500 for like replacing a piece of an air conditioner. Right? The $55 fee was for what range of cost?
That would be for replacing your water heater. Okay. It's a $50 flat fee, and then we have various applications that we're in the process of putting together. You check what I'm replacing: 3 toilets and 2 sinks and 1 garbage disposal. $5 for each of those things. Your running total is the permit fee.
So again, to replace a toilet, $55?
Yes.
This doesn't seem like it passes the reasonability test. I'm sorry.
Especially considering the fact that some residents in Dunwoody are going to have to replace their toilets because of the...
To sell their house.
Right?
Okay. We're exempt from
the DeKalb County.
The low flow.
The low flow.
Mm-hmm. Is there some way that we could put some type of a limit, you know, where, you know, if I'm a citizen who's going to replace their toilet or the hot water heater, you know, up to a certain level that, you know, I don't know what that is, and I don't know, you know, if I'm treading across ground here, I shouldn't be treading, but I'm just throwing this out, that we, you know, you can do that, maybe without a permit, or, I just wonder, you know, I don't know. Everybody's looking at me funny here. I must have gone wrong. Go ahead.
Well, the reason I'm looking at you funny is because I suggested a couple of meetings ago that we exempt from permits the small repairs that homeowners wanted to make, and the argument there was that, well, no, we need them to come in and at least have it reviewed so we make sure that what they're doing is safe. I'm okay if that's the argument, but, you know, then it ought to be a $5 fee just to, you know, and this idea that it's $55 for a permit to replace your toilet or a water heater just seems out of line. Go ahead, Tom.
Now, about the water heater, does that require an inspection?
Yes.
So, I mean, basically, it gets into the cost of sending an inspector out because, I mean, to me, it's kind of a Darwinian process. You do a bad job, you don't do it again. But on the other side, if the city permits it and doesn't inspect it, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you might have some liability hanging out there again because you allowed it, but you didn't inspect the carbon monoxide-producing fixture. And, you know, there's a cost to inspecting, and you have to cover the cost.
You want to jump in here, Jennifer, somewhere?
I think my most succinct answer is that it's not within the council's authority to declare what requires a permit and what doesn't require a permit, but it is entirely within your authority to set the fee associated with those permits.
I'll just say the fee on a cover, the cost of the inspection, it will require inspection.
I would agree.
And help me understand, under what conditions would you inspect and under what conditions wouldn't you expect? I can see that you might, for something that produces carbon monoxide or that's potentially flammable, that you might do an inspection. Certainly no one is going to come out and inspect every toilet installed in the city of Dunwoody.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you would come out and inspect the...
Yes.
Do we expect sort of massive ignoring of this? I mean, come on, nobody's going to do this.
Audit home people.
I'm not the building code expert. We have a building official on staff. I can pose to him to give us some scenarios of normal residential work that, and what inspection level would be occurring and what would not be occurring, and I can provide that to you. But unfortunately, I'm not the expert in that area, so I'm not going to be able to quote to you exactly what inspection is happening and what stage with each permit. Well, I can get that for you, I just can't do it off the top of my head.
It's my understanding that we haven't lifted the moratorium yet on building permits. So we're not. There's nobody lining up today to get to pay any of this or for us to issue any of this, right? There's no pressure on us to pass this tonight, right?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
My understanding is that if somebody comes in for a permit, that we have to have a rate chart to be able to work off of to issue that permit.
Right. Well, I thought we weren't issuing permits because we're under moratorium.
The 7th?
Yeah, we're doing it the next meeting if we're lifting it, so we could do this the next
meeting. You could, yeah, I'm sorry. You could hypothetically do this at the January 6th meeting?
Correct.
I just wonder if you could kind of go back, Jennifer, please, and take a look at this and use a the common sense approach of what is reasonable, about this. If there's some kind of either I don't think you can go by item because there's too many items, but maybe a dollar cost or something, and that you need a permit. I think we all agree that we need a permit. It's just the fact that costing out this, I don't think anybody here has probably ever done that. Maybe Adrian has, but the rest of us haven't. But I think that's one of the things that I think we need to look at, have some type of a monetary value of the improvement or the change or the enhancement or whatever we're talking about here, putting in new toilets or hot water heater, that is, it may be exempt from the permit fees except for actual cost or something like that, as Tom brought up, the cost of the inspection. And I don't know what the cost of an inspection is, but I don't imagine we can send somebody out there for $5. But maybe we could kind of, maybe on something like that, we could maybe soak up a little of the cost to the city rather than burden all the people with every small little item. But maybe you can you go back to the drawing board maybe and
absolutely
put all your heads together and come up with something that, that makes sense or something? I mean, not that this doesn't make sense, but I agree with everybody that, oh, here comes the city manager.
I was just going to whisper to her.
Could I ask for one point of clarification?
Sure.
Is it strictly the building permits and the mechanical permit fees that you'd like me to address? Was the rest of the proposal acceptable?
I think so. It was, in my case, the only piece I had. I had something in my previous notes that we put a dollar amount that would be exempt from permit cost. And whatever that dollar amount is, I will leave to your good judgment and your staff to come back with us with some figure. But a reasonable thing, replacing a toilets there, I can tell you how much they are. They're about $90 at Home Depot. I bought one for Adrian.
You get $100 back from DeKalb,
Yeah.
You make money.
Yeah. I think there just has to be some kind of common sense approach to that.
I understand. We can go back and look at that.
Why the question isn't based on dollar amounts? anybody who's painting their home on the outside, you're going to spend around $3,000. And that doesn't need to be inspected. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. That doesn't need to be inspected. So do you want to include things by the based on the dollar amount or whether they need an inspection or plan review?
Whether or not you need a permit is based upon the scope of work, and that's dictated by the international code, not by our fee schedule. What this fee schedule does is simply assigns a fee to services that do require a permit, which is decided outside of our authority.
Did you understand my question?
And just as a follow-on, is painting the exterior of your home one of those things that requires a permit?
No, sir.
Right, I didn't think so.
If you put new siding on your home, it is, though, correct?
I believe so, but I need to check with my expert.
I'm going to move it. We defer this until the next meeting.
Move has been made to second. Any discussion?
No,
let this one go through. Those in favor of deferring this until our next meeting, which will be pretty darn quick, I guess a week from tonight?
The 6th.
A week from tomorrow.
Okay. The 7th. That one is not actually on a Monday. 6th. It's actually a Tuesday.
We can't understand.
Because of holiday?
I just wanted to make sure everyone's back.
Raise your right hand. We defer to the next meeting. Opposed, same sign. If the fee schedule has been deferred to the next meeting, which is Tuesday, January 6th. Okay. Other business?
Danny.
John.
We just passed the municipal judges, and I had a question that I put to council that I never got an answer on. I'm wondering if you could take a look at that for me, Brian.
Which one?
The judges, the ordinance that we just passed.
Yes.
It reads that the judges are hereby appointed to serve for 4 years. And coinciding with the mayor's term, our mayor is only in office for 3 years.
So you would recommend that the council...
Could you put that as an agenda item if we, point of order, can we put that as an agenda item for the next meeting?
I'd like to make a motion that we amend the previous resolution.
I don't think that's other business.
Okay. I think we're kind of out of order, John. Because
I'll do whatever they tell me.
We can jump back.
We'd have to have a motion to reconsider.
Okay.
You have to move to revive it.
Like to make a motion for reconsideration?
Second. Okay, the motion has been made to reconsider item K7, discussion and approval of resolution appointing the judges. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed, same sign, 5-0 is back on the floor. John, your amendment.
I'd like to make a motion that we change the term of office to 3 years, coinciding with the mayor's term of office.
No. It's got to be 4 year term.
Scratch out the...
Okay, because right now it says coincide. Okay. I'd like to make a motion that this term of 4 years, that we delete coinciding with the mayor's term of office.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, we'll vote on the amendment to delete the words coinciding with the mayor's term. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed? Sign. Okay, any discussion on the original motion to approve the judges for the City of Dunwoody Municipal Court? And if seeing none, we'll vote on the original motion as amended. All those in favor, raise your right hand. Opposed? Same sign. Motion passes 5-0. Other business we have done at this time. And public comment.
On anything?
Yes.
Public comment. Anybody sign up in the back there? If you didn't, just come on up. Come on up, sir. Just introduce yourself and...
Robert Gazee. I've been in Village Mill for 27 years. Those of us over the age of 60 recognized that you had to get through college without credit. There was no credit cards for anything except gasoline. There was no interstate banking. I could go on forever. But what we recognize now is that the problem the country has right now is not a short-term problem. It could very well be a 5 to 10 year situation before we get out of this mess, because it took us 10 years to create it with all of this overspending on credit cards and whatever. We have a great opportunity to build a small town concept here of what community should really be about. And that would be the investigation of what is it that we can encourage people to get involved in, to do as a community service. Whether it would be cleaning up Brook Run on a field day, everybody come, bring your rake, we want to clean it up. But we also have to recognize we have a lot of properties within our area that we do not own. We have no idea whether 2 years from now the school district is going to have the money to keep the campuses of the school clean. Wouldn't it be great if we, through your leadership, if we could find some way to eventually start thinking about, there's a lot of things here we're going to be short of money on. Maybe that's something we could get our local citizens involved in to help out on, to say, on Saturday field day, we'll clean up the Dunwoody High School debris or whatever. Tremble on the sidewalks so we can walk the sidewalks. No one ever trims the sidewalks, but trims the bushes over the sidewalks anymore. And I hate to see people pushing the baby buggies out in the street because the sidewalk is there. I think there's a lot of things that we could get involved in that would really build the small town community spirit that this country had back in the 1930s and 1940s. That we're all in this together. We don't need a bunch of money to get out of everything. We could just, okay, just do a little on our own. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'll take a point of privilege on that. I think your point's well taken. Everybody does a little, so nobody has to do a lot. And I think your point is well taken. And one of the things we've talked to the mayor about is forming committees like that. And right now we are, as you know, kind of meeting ourselves, coming and going, getting the basics. But that's going to be stood up. We're going to have that. I want to see that. I want to see the citizens group. Thank you.
There's another point of privilege, if I may. The city of Decatur has a volunteer coordinator on a relatively small budget, $30,000, let's say. But that person brings in over $1 million of coordinated volunteer efforts throughout the city of Decatur. I'm really hoping that the city of Dunwoody may look at something like what the city of Decatur has on the volunteer coordinator to put the efforts of the city into action. So thank you for the suggestion.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Can I do more than one thing? You talked about the park, the Brook Run, the water run, what do you call it?
What's your name?
Mary Cassie, Old Village Lane. You talked about the park, the water run, and I was under the understanding the problem was the deep pool at the end, that the water formed 3 feet deep. I wondered if they would consider looking at Webbridge Park, which has a water run, but there's grading on it at the end, so nobody gets in the deep end. I thought that was the biggest problem, was the big, deep pool at the end these children could drown in, and a lot of rough edges with the rocks. And didn't we vote a bond issue for $11 million for Brook Run, and only more has been spent?
Robert has the rest.
So do we get the rest as a city?
That will be I'll answer that just a point of privilege information. We would sure like to get that as a city. But I will tell you that is going to be a hard negotiating item with the county. So I what I'm telling you, I guess in the meantime, is yes, we would love to have that, but don't hold your breath in the meantime.
It's not due to us.
Well, we don't know that. No, I didn't say that. I did not say that. You said it's not going to be an easy issue to grasp a hold of.
And right now, do we have to have a permit with DeKalb County to change our code? Have we always had to do that? When you have a plumber come, have we had to have a permit?
Can you answer that, Jennifer? I know this is a little out of order, but we're just going to go a little out of order here.
I'm talking about plumber, not a do-it-yourself.
Right.
In order to answer that perfectly correctly, I would need to have that exemption section of the international code in front of me. It's my intuition that, yes, that would require a permit. See, when we did look at setting our fee rates, we pulled many applications, and within those applications for just plumbing work, there were check boxes for just replacing a water closet. Therefore, I concluded that that would be a permit. Okay.
Thank you. Bob?
apocalypse, but again, real quick now, Bill Robinson's not here, he can't I want to caution, I did this previously when you guys were adopting the zoning codes, and Councilman Wittenstein threw out, I don't like the number of parking spaces, it just doesn't feel right. You had the wisdom to go back and say, look, before we rule and make a motion on our feelings, let's defer to staff and get them official opinions and reviews. I'm going to suggest what you did on the alcohol in the parks teeters on that same issue. What you did when you did the park, when you did the alcohol in the park, is you were discussing legislation, the wording of the legislation, during the middle of a public hearing. And that doesn't give your council the full chance to fully review and vet the situation. And you don't go to your staff to find out what the impact was going to be. So I suggest before you legislate from the floor, that perhaps a procedure should be developed that you submit your proposed amendments in advance to council and to staff so they could give you professional opinions on those. And number two, I follow this pretty closely on the internet and John's blog and that type of stuff, and I don't know if your amendment was even posted anywhere. And since it wasn't, at least I didn't see it, perhaps those amendments can be discussed the first time and copies of those amendments with staff recommendations be available to the public. Because again, you run the risk every time you legislate from the floor like this, without full legal advice and full legal counsel, without talking to your full professional staff, of legislating yourself into a hole that you can't get out of. Now, I think you tried to fix it by sitting back and cutting out the nature park or the nature center. But I'm not even quite sure if that's legal, if you haven't given them special privilege over the rest of the properties in the city, that only this one tax-exempt organization can now have an event without having a liquor license or a liquor permit. So I think you kind of legislate yourself into a corner. And I caution you that you stop doing that, that you go back and take all your good ideas and your good intentions, okay, but make sure that what you end up with, number one, is legally enforceable, and number two, doesn't have now legally unintended consequences. Your original motion, Robert, was, to allow that occasional beer while watching my son play baseball. I am sure that if you did a check on Little League confrontations between parents at close Little League games, you don't need those type of confrontations fueled by the drinking of beer at a Little League game. There's been incidents at Murphy Campbell Park, at football, in baseball. Alcohol only enhances those problems. So I suggest that you consider doing that. It's your show. I'm only here to throw my two cents in, but I think you need to start taking full advantage of the professional staff you have on hand. Ask them for their opinions. Get it in writing. At least have the audience the opportunity to look at what your amendment is and what the impact of that amendment and the purpose of that amendment. One thing, I think Bob Dallas said it before, that's one thing DeKalb County does very well. It fully vets these amendments before they come through. And I'll sum up with, I was disappointed last week I got a call from the mayor to let me know that Mr. Hennigan's so aptly named lunched an amendment to have these conversations about bills when they're being discussed. I had to leave the room when your amendment came up because there was no opportunity for me to come up to discuss the negative to your proposal. And that is without a doubt the reason why you have to start having public comments, pro and con, as you start adopting these amendments. Because you went forward with something to the council for the first time, and no opportunity was given to the people to sit back and see your amendment, comment on your amendment, or contact their councilman about your amendment. And I think that's an error. And I hope sometime in the next session or next year you reconsider that Hennigan amendment. I'll give it to you.
Bob Dallas, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, council members. Four very quick points. Number one, with law enforcement, now we have our in a fully staffed budget. The biggest killer of law enforcement on the road is car crashers. This is a law enforcement memorial. I'm going to get to the chief that we produce out of our office, and 61% of the law enforcement officials in Georgia who are killed in the line of duty were killed in crashes. I know Chief Grogan knows that, and so while he's out protecting us, we need to be mindful of our driving and have us protect them as well. Second and third thing, I just want to give you stuff that I received. This is a list, Mr. Mayor, of all the services that are ever provided by anybody to Union City. And then secondly, this is something put out by a national organization for the League of Cities that talks about how you're going to involve the public and give you some best practices. There's so much great material out there. I know City Manager gets it as well. And take the opportunity to read those, because that's how I've been able to learn a lot over the past several years working for the governor. And I look forward to continuing working with you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Just a quick comment. You know, we are going to, we are trying our umpteen best to involve everyone in the city. You know, I can tell you right now, there isn't one citizen in the city that hasn't been answered, that probably never was answered from DeKalb County. And I know people in my own district have commented to me, and we may be remorse once in a while, but I will tell you, we're moving ahead full steam. We've got a pretty full plate. And I'm not going to brag, but these folks right up here have worked their tail off, along with their staff out there that kicked in. You know, we sent out RFPs for proposal on Halloween night, and here we are running up the city. You know, 2 months later, we were one month into running a new city. So we have been a little bit busy. I think there is, all of you know our phone numbers. All of you know our email addresses. I get them every day, and I'm sure everybody else does here. I know that. And we encourage that, so please keep your emails coming. Pro or con, keep them coming. You know, if everybody tells us we're doing a good job, that's not necessarily the best thing either. Okay, with that in mind, Steve?
I haven't read the Comcast franchise agreement, but my guess is that it doesn't say anything about the obligation of Comcast to leave property the way they found it when they're done destroying it. And my experience in the last year has been that with these franchise agreements, is it in there?
Yeah, the new one, the old one, does not. The new one I just passed out, it doesn't have to agree.
What about Georgia Power? I don't think there's anything in there. See, the problem is, they come out, like Georgia Power put one of these new fiber optic cable boxes in the front of my neighborhood, destroyed our whole entry landscape. Came out and did a halfway job of fixing it, unacceptable. We had to have them come back a total of 4 times, and the only reason I think they did was because nobody was signed up with AT&T for the new fiber optic cable, and they wanted the business, and we weren't going to sign up unless they came out and did a nice job in the front. And in the end, it was less than satisfactory, but better than nothing. But we have the same problem with Comcast in our neighborhood. They relayed a major cable in front of a couple of houses, destroyed the yards, didn't come back. You call Comcast. I called them as the neighborhood representative, and they said, well, we can't tell you who does that. Okay. So I went through the back door and called the utility marking service, the guy that comes out and marks the lines when they dig. And they do that for all the utilities. And I said, who contracted you to come out and mark those lines? And he gave me the name of the sub, because AT&T and Comcast, they all work through subcontractors. He gave me the name of the sub, and after 6 phone calls, they came out and did unsatisfactory repairs. Many more phone calls, they just refused to return my call. You just couldn't get anywhere with them, so we had the neighbors had to do their own repairs. So, and I ultimately found out that DeKalb County has a governmental liaison with Comcast and these different agencies. So I got that lady. She gave me the name of the person with Comcast. I called her. She was going to get back to me. She didn't. I emailed her. I mean, I haven't heard anything. And so my point is that maybe Public Works can have a liaison with Comcast and with other people. Because, you know, if you drive through Dunwoody and you look at these little Comcast metal towers where your wires come out, when they do an install or a repair, it's a challenge to find where they've actually put the cover back on the front. They just kind of lay it there and drive off. It's just little things like that, that if it was done right and professionally, it would make the city look bigger, but they just don't care. But I guarantee that on your 1st of February compact cash bill, you will see a 9.5% rate increase, which they do every year. And yet you get nothing more for it. And I think the only way is to have somebody in a position of power get on the telephone with whoever their government person is and say, you know, you need to, somebody called in a complaint, you need to come out and do a decent repair. It really doesn't take much longer. Their subs just don't care because time is money. I suspect the subs are getting paid to do it, but they're just not doing it. Thank you.
Point's well taken. I think people you see up here and folks you see over there, next time you have that problem, call. We'll handle it. We'll run with that ball. Okay. With that in mind, I see a couple people going home to get their pajamas right now, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion's been made. Second. second. All those in favor of adjourning, raise your right hand.